Welcome to the Gamer Horizon Podcast. This is episode 7, recorded also on Sunday, March 4th, 2012. Hey Anthony, what's going on, man? It sounds like we haven't talked in a very long time. Oh my god.
It's been about 20 minutes, Alex. 20 minutes. Long time, I miss you.
Okay, don't be so needy now, because I might delete your phone number and block you from my mobile phone and stuff. But anyways, kidding aside, how are you, man?
I'm doing quite well.
Okay, so right after that crazy involved discussion that we had about sexism and fighting games, and just all the other stuff that was happening in the industry, I can finally breathe a sigh of relief and actually talk about a lot of the games that we've been playing. Thank fucking goodness.
Hooray. It's always good.
I was gonna say, that's the only thing you can add to that.
Well, that's a good thing, because there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, no shit, right?
And we're going to actually be dedicating one segment to a game that you and I have both been playing, right?
Yeah, but we'll see where that goes, because I don't want to commit on too much time on that thing, because I don't think that I can devote a whole hour to talking about just that one game.
But no, probably not an hour, but...
Yeah, we'll see. Let's just wing it and stuff. But, so we've held on to a lot of the games that we've been playing. You know, we did kind of provide a good hour of what we've been playing in the previous episode, but we wanted to kind of focus on this episode, just for the games we've been playing. Some of our other episodes and stuff. And, it's not like you guys aren't used to this already, right?
Right.
So let's,
we've done how many episodes?
They're like this? Yeah, this is the 7th episode? Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so that's about 14 hours of us talking.
Yeah, just the games that we've been playing, right? Oh, gosh. Okay, so let's start with you. What's up with you?
Holy crap. Okay, well, let's talk about my Ghosts and Goblins fix that we briefly touched upon last episode.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, what prompted this? Because I'm Ghosts and Goblins isn't one of those games where I think to myself, oh, let me play those again, because I am such a glutton for fucking punishment.
Oh, yeah. Well, what prompted me is that I do own the original, the NES port of the original Ghosts and Goblins.
I was going to say, if you said the Commodore 64 version, I would have flipped out.
Really? Why is that?
Well, I don't know. It's the original version kind of implies many different things. And certainly, the NES version probably was as close to what Capcom, well, of course, they fucking made the game. But you know what I mean? It's I don't know. You get what I'm saying here? Because the Commodore 64 isn't necessarily the platform that people think, oh man, we have high resolution video games on that platform, you know what I mean?
Commodore 64.
That's what I'm saying.
Shit. Let's see. What was I saying though? The NES port on the Wii Virtual Console, right?
Okay.
So I kind of played that a little bit, but what really prompted it was because of the Vita. I bought Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins.
The PSP version.
Yes, the PSP game, which is actually an original Ghosts and Goblins game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's not necessarily a port, but it's a Ghosts and Goblins game.
So what new things did they do to this game?
It's pretty interesting. One of the things they did is there's an inventory system.
What?
Kind of an inventory system. The way armor works is a little bit different. You can get armor that actually upgrades your armor. So instead of getting hit and you're in your underpants,
mm-hmm.
you actually go back to your regular armor.
I see.
So,
and then with that depletes, you go into your underwear.
Yeah.
Ah, I see.
So yeah, that That's pretty much it. If you have a PSP or whatever, I would recommend this if you really like Ghosts and Goblins like I do.
Mm-hmm.
It's always been a series I've liked, but it's a very difficult series.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, like, and this is kind of like very, you know, like totally like being like silly and stuff. Do you think that Diablo is the kind of like the unofficial sequel to like Ghosts and Goblins? Because, you know, like you can like destroy your armor and you wind up not wearing anything because your armor is all busted. I mean, you know, it'd be like in your, you know, your birthday suit and be like, oh shit, I'm in the middle of a dungeon and all my shit's not repaired. Fuck.
Use a town portal.
And speaking of which, have you ever seen that video of like how Diablo really took over the world?
No.
Basically, like, you know, you always wonder, because I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they never really answer truly whether or not demons can use the same town portal, right?
That is a good question. Well, I've always wondered that, like, even when I played the original, why didn't they fucking follow me?
Exactly. So so the guys from College Humor and Dorkly basically made a video showing that the demons did exactly that, and that's how Diablo won.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking hilarious. But you should check it out. Anyways, Ghosts and Goblins, continue.
Yes, Ghosts and Goblins. One thing they did change is there are difficulty modes. In easy mode, it will actually, not only will it alter the enemies, but it will actually alter the level design.
Interesting.
You go to a normal level. One of the biggest changes, if you play on normal, is when you die, you respawn in that spot you died.
Oh, wow.
But if you want the classic experience, you go ultimate difficulty.
Oh shit.
So when you die, you as in previous Ghosts and Goblins, there were very sparse checkpoints in those games. So you die, you go back to that checkpoint.
How far did you get in this game?
The second level, got my ass kicked. It's a Ghosts and Goblins game. What you know.
Which also means, by the way, that in order to actually get the real ending, you have to play the game twice.
I don't know about this one.
Really?
No. In the original, yes. We all know that. That was the biggest ripoff in gaming history.
That's not a you ripoff.
Oh, how? Come on. You're like, that game's difficult as it is. Well, you know, you get to the end, I'm not the real final boss. You have to repeat all the shit over.
Okay, fine. I mean, I have no intention of playing like Ghosts and Goblins. Although I was, you know, I was enamored by the artwork, you know, on the Famicom cart. But after playing the game, I'm like, fuck this game, man.
It is brutal. They are no doubt brutal. And I mean, I think they're fantastic games. One thing that's always memorable about that series. Is Ghouls and Ghosts,
right?
The sequel to Ghosts and Goblins, and for some reason that introduction sequence is just very, very memorable.
Yeah,
with the whole like everyone celebrating, there's firecrackers and you know going off, and then the princess gets kidnapped again. Just the way they did it was kind of very cinematic, even for its time.
Yeah,
this is a game from 1988.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought they did a very good job.
Yeah, it's about it's about a year before Ninja Gaiden for the NES.
Yeah. Yeah, I really remember that scene and it kind of stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Ghouls and Ghosts. And then of course there's the seminal classic Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
Yes.
So what's interesting about the series is that there was a game, there were Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts, Super Ghouls and Ghosts, right?
Uh-huh.
Then in between that and Ultimate, there was one game called Makamura for the Wonder Swan.
Makamura.
Yeah, Makamura. And I don't know how that played.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, until Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins, there were no more installments. Unless you count the Gargoyles Quest spinoff.
Or Maximo,
yes. And then Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins came out, and then the newest one. Ghost and Goblins Gold Knights, which I have been playing as well.
Wait, where did that come from?
Ghost and Goblins Gold Knights?
Uh-huh.
That one is actually out on the iPhone.
Really?
Yes, it is.
And it's by Capcom.
Yes, it is. And it is it, and it uses a touchscreen, but I was very surprised. The controls are very fluid. Very good controls.
That's very interesting, considering, because I do not equate iPhone to fluid controls.
I got surprised. I was not expecting it to be very good controls, but they feel very smooth.
And that's kind of surprising me, because, you know, like, we've talked about this in the previous, you know, the previous two episodes. It's like, it's difficult for me to negotiate the fact that we are recording episode 7 the same day we're recording episode 6. But anyways, in a previous episode and stuff, we were talking about Death Smiles. Remember that? Like,
yeah.
I don't, on iPhone, it's like, it does not equate, like, fluid controls for me at all. But, you know, I'll take your word for it, because obviously you have you play the games and stuff, so.
Yeah, Golden Knights is very good. It is.
Is it just the same game though?
No, it's not a port. It's a whole new game in the series. In fact, it kind of leans towards it kind of leans towards Aetherian Legend a little bit, and I'll explain that in a moment. Mm-hmm. Golden Knights is actually a two-part story.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, Golden Knights 1 ends at a cliffhanger,
mm-hmm.
which Golden Knights 2 picks up.
Okay.
So with Golden Knights, you actually not only can play as Arthur, you can play as his sidekick or friend, Lancelot of all people.
Okay.
Who, again, you have to save Princess Prin-Prin again and all that.
Prin-Prin. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we were making fun of that name in the last episode. Mm-hmm. Prin-Prin. So there are some major changes in this game, though.
Yeah, you mentioned, the life bar.
Yes, there's a life bar.
That's interesting.
So basically what happens is the life bar is not for you. It's for your armor.
Oh.
So you have 4 bars. Once you run out of the 4 bars,
mm-hmm.
if you get hit one more time, you go into your skivvies again.
So is it like, so can you then get one-shotted?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, no, like with full armor?
No.
Okay.
No. You have 4 bars. Each time you get hit, you lose a bar.
Okay.
Okay? Once you lose all those bars,
mm-hmm.
you lose your armor.
I see.
And then you're in your skivvies.
I see.
But then again, you can find armor, and then the life bar will come back into play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially how it works in that game.
Does it make the game any easier?
Actually, it does make it a little bit easier.
Hmm. I wonder how series purists feel about that.
I don't know. That's a good question, considering how... Though, and we're not kidding. If you've never played these games, Alex and I do not exaggerate. Those games are brutal. What Alex is saying is completely true. These are very brutal games.
Mm-hmm. They are not easy games. Even Maximo, which is kind of the spiritual successor to the series, is not fucking easy either.
No, nor are the Gargoyles Quest games.
Yeah.
Gargoyles Quest, Gargoyles Quest 2, and Demon's Crest.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they're not easy games, but I love them. I love the art direction. I love the atmosphere of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're Rescue the Princess, mind you, but I love their atmosphere. I always have.
Yeah, just remember that the first time through, you're like, yay, I'm at the last boss. He's not the last boss. He really isn't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to burst your bubble right now, because guess what? If it took you about several hours to get to that boss, you're going to have to relive that experience all over again in a much harder difficulty setting, because guess what? Satan is at the end of that, and he was just kind of messing around with you. Like, by the way, you actually have to go through the entire thing all over again. You were just dreaming or some bullshit like that. I don't know.
I don't remember exactly, but you do have to repeat the whole game.
Yes.
Or it was like the false ruler or some shit.
Yeah. It was a false ruler. So therefore, you have to redo everything all over again.
It is one thing I will say, it is an interesting that they did release Golden Knights on the iPhone.
Is it only on the iPhone?
Uh-huh.
Holy shit.
Now, I will say this. The first Golden Knights, I don't know how much the second one is, but Golden Knights 1 is on sale for 99 cents.
No shit.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Not too bad, Alex.
No, but I don't think I'm going to have to.
Oh, are you scared?
It's not scared as in survival horror scared, but I'm just like, it's hard to justify like a 99-cent purchase for a game they have to finish twice over at like that difficulty level.
I don't think it does that. They don't eat like Ghouls and Ghosts did not. The other games in the series never did that to you. Only the original.
I don't know. If it's 99 cents now, I can get it 99 cents later. You know,
it's on sale only till like March the 8th.
Oh, bull. Whatever. They're going to put it on sale again later.
It's not going to make you repeat the game.
I don't care. Not getting it. Jesus. Don't press the issue.
I'm just saying it's not. They all don't do that to you.
Tell me when you beat the game.
Okay. Well, what I do know happens at the end of this one is it does end at a cliffhanger.
Oh, Jesus. And they'll make you buy like a $10 game. Surprise!
Well, I don't know. I'm going to look up and see how much it is. You got me curious.
What, the sequel?
Yeah, the sequel.
It's probably like $4 or $5.99 or something.
Well, let's see. Ghouls and Ghosts, 99 cents. Ah. It is 99 cents.
What the fuck? How are they making money out of this game?
Yeah, it is 99 cents off this game.
What, is there like microtransactions so you can like basically like be invulnerable?
No microtransactions.
Huh, interesting.
It's pure 99 cents.
Wow, okay.
Cool Knights too.
Weird.
And in this one, they Percival takes Lancelot's place.
Percival,
another Arthurian character.
They should just fucking make like a Knights of the Round and call it quits.
You really want another Knights of the Round?
I mean, look at what they're doing. They have Arthur, they got Lancelot, now they got Percival. The only thing missing here is an actual Knights of the Round game. I mean, that's what it is.
Perhaps. That was a good game, though. That was a good beat-em-up.
I know, but it's like, here, they're just like basically like teasing us, saying, we're going to put him on like Ghosts and Goblins and stuff, but we're not going to put him like in an actual, you know, beat-em-up like sequel to like Knights of the Round. Fucking bullshit. Tease.
So, excuse me. So, yeah, they have it's 99 cents.
Cool.
$2.
Cool. So, what else have you been playing?
Well, let's see. Dynasty Warriors next. I don't want to talk too much about that.
I actually, okay, so I kind of alluded on that in a previous show, but I do like a lot of the elements of it. It is still Dynasty Warriors, though. Like, I mean, you know, from what you made it sound like in the previous episodes and stuff, like it was like, you know, very different from what I'm used to. Like,
No. It's not very different. It just adds enough variety to keep.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, you know, it's still kind of, yeah, I mean, they have like a lot of this gesture-based gameplay that's on there, which is kind of cool the first time around, but like when you keep seeing it like over and over, you're kind of like, okay, right, this is kind of ridiculous. Although, when I played as Liu Bei, and then you do his Speed Masao and stuff like that, it was really cool, like where you have to like, where you can like slash on screen, you're turning the camera around and stuff, and basically juggling everybody, so that's kind of a cool thing. Although, you know, that's something that you can very well do with like the buttons, but again, I understand how that is, so
okay,
yeah. But I have to add, though, before you move on or whatever, the Empires type gameplay of like the Risk style gameplay with like the battlefields being set on particular like areas and stuff like that is here in this game, and that's actually really cool. I really like that part aspect of it.
Works for me.
Yep,
works for me. Yeah, I will say, what will I say about it? Shoot. It is a good game. And what I meant by different is I think it's for people who are either jaded from it, jaded from those games.
Okay.
Like I was.
Okay.
For the longest time. I think it adds enough for you to come back for this installment. Mm-hmm. Whether for future installments, that has yet to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But for this one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Dynasty Warriors. Don't expect anything much else.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anything else?
Oh, quite a bit, actually.
Okay.
Let's see. Talk just for you, we'll talk about Sakura Samurai. Just joking.
Oh, God, no.
That game is amazing. I'm going to say it. Alex does not agree with me, folks, but it is
$60
amazing. It's not $60.
Just saying.
$6. I would pay $20 for it.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
RoboCop reference. Awesome.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll move on. Let's see. I did start Tales of the Abyss.
Mm-hmm. So okay. So give me a background about that game.
Tales of the Abyss. Yeah. Okay. Tales of the Abyss initially came out for the PlayStation 2.
Okay.
Okay. I think it was trying to think which came out first, that or Legendia. I don't remember. So what, I'm trying. Let me check. I'm going to have to go get my trusty encyclopedia friend here.
Twisty? You're turning into like Elmer Fudd, like Tweety Bird. Twisty.
Twisty. It's Twisty.
It's a Twisty Tweety Bird.
Hey, there's our title.
No. I get to determine the titles, buddy.
God damn it.
Okay, so. Okay, don't take too fucking long. Come on, dead air.
Oh, Jesus. I already found it.
Jesus Christ.
Jackass. December 15, 2005, it came out in Japan.
Okay.
Okay. It is, I believe, the 8th game in the Tales series.
Okay, interesting.
So, it is the 8th game. It is, and it just came out on the 3DS.
Okay.
Not too long ago.
That doesn't really tell me anything about the game, my friend.
Like, what do you mean by background? Like, release?
I mean, okay, like, just give me the 411 on it. Like, why should I care about this game?
Oh, why you should care about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know you liked Vesperia to a degree.
Yeah, I did. I really liked it.
Except for that boss.
Yeah, that's the only sour point that I have in the series. Like, that's like, you know, that pretty much stopped my tracks. But I got past it, and of course, I got a new Xbox, so my progress is gone, and now I'm like, fuck, there's like other games now. Oh well.
Well, you know, that's Tales games can have very different. There are points in those games, in all of them, that they have very difficult boss battles.
Right.
You know, you have to plan. You have to literally plan, and you have to use your party mates.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way the Tales is constructed, it looks like a solo kind of button mashing fest. Mm-hmm. It is not. If you play it that way, you are frickin' fucking doomed.
Mm-hmm.
Frickin' fucking doomed. That's awesome. you are screwed if you go in there thinking it's just pure button mashing.
No, not at all. I mean, it is an RPG. No.
Yeah. And I think Tales of the Abyss is very good at that.
Mm.
Very, very good at keeping that legacy going for the Tales series.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of this one, this is probably one of the more popular games in the series.
How so?
Just a lot of people like it a lot. It's probably I would say with Symphonia and Vesperia, it is one of the top three games in the series, the most popular.
What's the storyline?
The storyline is basically you're this kind of spoiled rich kid. Mm-hmm. His name's Luke, and he's basically under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, in his big mansion. And essentially what happens is, and mind you, this is from the little bit I've played. He's under house arrest, and the reason as to why he's under house arrest is there was an incident many years before.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the incident was that he was kind of kidnapped.
Okay.
He was kidnapped and he's being kept prisoner. That's why he's under house arrest, essentially.
All right.
So, trying to remember. And then suddenly this mysterious woman comes out, and he ends up escaping.
Interesting.
So
basically this game is exactly the same as the PS2 version, correct?
Yeah, it's essentially the same.
So why would I get this version over the probably cheaper PS2 version?
Well, I think it's good for if you're looking for an RPG fixed on the 3DS.
Okay.
Again, it has some mapped out controls. Now, mind you, this is a guy that owns both versions. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
So the PS2 version is actually maybe cheaper, but it's harder. It's still a pretty hard to find game.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be straight up. Pretty much Tales games are hard to find. I paid $60 for Tales of Destiny.
Oh, wow.
Recently, you know. Mm-hmm. Let's see. And Tales of the Abyss is hard to find. I'm not going to lie to you about that. So it may be pricier, but it is easier to find.
$30 on Amazon.
$30 for the PS2 version?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so $10 cheaper. $10 more. It just depends on which way you want to go.
Yeah. Because, of course, the next question that I have, of course, is, like, how's the 3D? Like, does it add anything? I mean, I'm not sure if you're, like, one of those, like, 3DS gamers who actually prefer the 3D on there, so.
3D depends. It depends on the game.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. Mario 3D Land works with the 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Ocarina of Time did not.
Okay.
This game is on the same lines as Ocarina of Time. It does not work in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
The 3D just seems real blurry, and that's how I felt about Ocarina of Time.
I see. I follow you.
So, I mean, unlike other games, like, you know, even Mario Kart 7 to some degree,
mm-hmm.
it was just more of a nice enhancement.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything, but the reason I would say about Tales of the Abyss is it's again a harder game to track down,
mm-hmm.
and if you're looking for an RPG fix that's portable, I would go with this version,
mm-hmm.
and it plays just as well. Plus, you know, like there's a lot more mapping on the touchscreen, which makes things a little bit more easier to control.
I see.
I think that's another key reason.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking now, mind you, when you do mapping, that's more of a interface fix, mm-hmm. not necessarily to the Game Boy. Not a gameplay issue.
It doesn't
necessarily make the game easier.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes it easier to manage. And there's a huge difference.
Okay.
As you know. So I would, you know, I know that you're kind of a fan of Tales.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking to explore the series further, I would get this whenever you have time. Mm-hmm. But considering you have about as many games to play, I don't know when that will be.
Yeah, and a lot more RPGs soon to come. Yay!
Yeah, and then you know what? This is a good year to be a Tales fan, because not only do we have this port, but we have Grace's F coming out,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think you'll be getting.
I don't know what that's all about, though. That's kind of the problem.
Okay. What would you like to know about it? Because this game I know a lot about.
You know me, like I like story, so you have to hook me in with the story.
Okay. The story is about childhood friendship, essentially.
Okay.
From what I know about the story, it is about three friends, and they make a promise to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them goes off to the Knights Academy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically about them, you know, essentially trying to not break that promise.
I see.
That's what it is. So it's really a story about friendship and, you know, and the bonds that you form through your life. And even when you go your separate ways, keeping those bonds and doing what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, basically the main character in this one, his name's Asbel.
Mm-hmm.
And Asbel, I don't know.
okay.
I don't want to say Asbel. Okay.
Nice.
Basically, what happens is he's one of the kids that makes this promise,
mm-hmm.
and an incident happens, so he ends up enlisting in the Knights Academy,
mm-hmm.
and then the game goes about 7 years later, and Asbel is basically graduating from the school,
mm-hmm.
but then his father dies,
right.
So he has to give up his knight position, and he has to become the lord. Take over his father's lord,
mm-hmm.
lordship.
Right.
Become the lord. So, and then while maintaining, you know, him trying to keep this promise.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a pretty interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've intrigued you, but.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I'm reading up on it, and it's actually like an enhanced port of the Wii version.
Yeah, yeah. The Wii.
Released in Japan, I guess, like 2009. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, the Wii version. If you read further, the Wii version actually was derided by critics, and it was because the game was so bug-ridden.
Ooh.
Now, what happened was, as we all know, the Wii does not have a patching system.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to do it the old-fashioned way.
Mm-hmm.
call up Namco Bandai or whatever, and they'll send you a replacement copy of the game.
Jesus.
So of course that happened. And then in December 2010, we got Tales of Graces F. Now, mm-hmm. the Tales has this kind of infamous history of enhanced ports. What they will do with a Tales game mm-hmm. is they will release it on one console, and then they'll release it again, but in a much better version.
Mm-hmm.
Most games follow this, mm-hmm. okay? For example, let's take a look at Vesperia.
Mm-hmm.
They have the 360 version of Vesperia,
mm-hmm.
which is great because we got it in the United States. But I would have liked to have gotten the PS3 version, because the PS3 version adds a whole new party member to the game. There's a character named Flynn in that game as well that plays an important role and who does join your party in that version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of more side quests. They expand on a lot of backstories, and it links to the anime movie of Tales of Vesperia: First Strike. So usually in here in America, we don't get those ports. Like, for example, we get the original version. Like, we got Tales of Symphonia, the GameCube version,
right.
not the advanced PS2 version.
Mm-hmm.
But Tales of Graces F is the exception.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's the exception is the PS3 is the enhanced port. Not only are all those bugs fixed,
mm-hmm.
but again, it's a director's cut of the story. The story is much longer
mm-hmm.
than the Wii version. There's additional side quests, costumes, things like that. And then the best part, too, is there is a, I believe, a 10 to 15 hour epilogue story in the vein of Persona Fest.
Oh, my gosh.
Added to it. Added. You beat the game, and then you have this 10 to 15 hour epilogue game that you can play afterwards.
Crazy.
So, I mean, that's a lot of content.
That is a lot of content. You know, I was looking more into, like, Tales of the Abyss, and there's an anime out for it?
Yes.
Jesus. Like, it's like a multimedia, like, empire or something.
Yeah, Fantasia, Symphonia, Eternia, Abyss, and Vesperia all have animes based on them.
Crazy.
So, I mean, you know, it's pretty cool. It's a cool series. It really is. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they bring Zillia here over.
Yeah, Zillia's the latest one, right?
Yeah, Zillia came out in September. And what's interesting about Zillia is it takes a Star Ocean the Second Story approach to the way it plays. Because you've played Star Ocean the Second Story, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Remember how you chose between Claude and Reyna to play?
Yeah.
Okay. And then depending on who you play, the game experience is different from their point of view.
Right.
It does the same thing.
Mm.
There's a male and female character.
I see.
And who you play, it affects your experience of it. What's very interesting, too, is it's the first Tales game to have two anime intros.
Mm-hmm.
Usually a Tales game has an anime intro that plays before the title screen
mm-hmm.
that you can watch. This one has two, one based on who you select.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they really went all out on Zillia.
Right.
And I don't know if you've seen it, but Zillia has a very unique kind of watercolor art style. It looks absolutely amazing.
Hmm.
So, I don't know if I've got you convinced about the series. I did to a degree about 3 years ago.
Well, I like Vesperia, but the thing is, like, I feel like I can't get into any of the other ones unless I actually commit and finish Vesperia first and foremost.
Okay.
Because I did invest a lot of, you know, a lot of time into that game, and I do enjoy it. Like, I wholeheartedly enjoy it. You know, and I like the battle system. I like the gameplay. I like the story. I like the characters. You know, that's a perfect combination for me.
Vesperia had a wonderful cast of characters.
Yeah. Like, you can really relate to a lot of the people there and stuff. And again, you know, I'm at a point right now where I'm kind of trying to negotiate whether or not my likes for JRPGs have something to do with the setting. But, you know, like, from my understanding and stuff, like, you know, like, I'm kind of a little bit averse on, like, you know, kind of cyber, like, kind of like more technological settings. Like, I'm okay with, like, cyberpunk, but not anything more extreme than that. So,
right.
So I'm okay with the Tales series, it looks like, because the prevailing mood is kind of like, you know, almost traditional fantasy in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of like that strange mix that earlier Final Fantasies had, where it was a traditional fantasy world.
Yeah.
But there were very mild elements, and I mean very mild elements of steampunk.
Right.
And I'm not talking Final Fantasy VI. I consider Final Fantasy VI a pure steampunk game.
Right.
Okay, I'm talking like, you know, 5, 4, like even 4 had like, you know, the very mild airships, mm-hmm. but
yeah,
and basic machinery, but not complete steampunk. That's how Tales is.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm trying to think if this has the world map or not. Mm-hmm. Vesperia had a world map.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely check this out.
Okay.
And if you do buy Grace's F,
mm-hmm.
you'd be helping us Tales fans, and you'd be a Tales fan too, get us
Zillia.
You would help, yeah, Zillia. We need Zillia.
Mm. Okay.
So
we will see. We will see.
And by the way, pre-order from GameStop and you get, you know, pre-order bonus DLC.
Oh jeez.
Of course, and a theme. Yay. I need a new theme anyway. Like, some of the themes I have are crappy. Like, I have a stupid dragon.
You have a stupid dragon on your PS3?
Yeah, a dragon theme that I downloaded for free off PlayStation Plus.
That's fine for me. I have, like, Dragon Girl as a theme or something like that. I don't know.
I had I put this big-breasted, scantily-clad barbarian woman on there the other day. The wife didn't exactly like that.
So. Yeah. I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, so I was like, that's cool, but I mean, you know, big-breasted women. Speaking of big-breasted women,
uh-huh.
I got Tales of Devil Survivor 2. I played a little bit of it, but I want to comment.
Uh-huh.
I want you to, do you have your copy near you?
Not exactly near me.
Jesus Christ!
What?
Have you seen the breast on the main female character?
Wait, there's... Main female character, you mean you're playable, like as in that's you?
No, the main, it's like Devil Survivor. There's a main female character,
right, and a whole bunch.
And there's a,
yeah,
like the yeah. Have you? Those are, oh my god, those aren't even attractive.
What?
Put in the character IO from Devil Survivor 2. You have to see this.
Okay.
This is purely, and we were just talking about sexism in the last episode. No, I'm just saying these are inhumanly possible. This would kill a man.
Well, okay.
Put an IO from Devil Survivor.
Okay, I'm trying to look for it right now. I do have a list.
Oh, she's 17 years old.
That's possible. That's possible. Come on.
I was looking through the instruction book, the thick-ass instruction book,
uh-huh.
which is very rare,
uh-huh.
and I was like, Jesus Christ!
Oh dear, what is my safe search set to? Moderate, and I'm seeing, like, bare breasts. Okay. Apparently the Japanese have taken a liking to IO as well, so, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see any of those.
Yeah, because there's doujins and stuff that are showing up, so, alright, I'm just closing that right now.
Alright. I've played very little of Devil Survivor 2.
Okay.
One thing that the reviewers have said is not true, though.
Which is?
I don't know. It's a lighter game. It's more lighthearted than Devil Survivor.
I have to check it out because, like, I don't think that... One of the things that I liked about Devil Survivor's setting is that how dark it is. Like, it's... In a way, I think I told you about this before. In a way, it kind of reminds me of The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, it does. And I agree with you, because World's Not Enough, I've said this many times, is one of my favorite games.
Or in the last. Oh, shit. No, The World Is Not Enough is like James Bond.
you meant The World Ends With You.
Yes. The World Is Not... I don't know why I said that. Yeah, that is like a Bond movie.
You know, you'd have the strange tits... Imagine Tetsuya Nomura's take on Sean Connery, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig.
That'd be a bunch of belts, I'll tell you that much.
Spiky hair.
Yeah, with spiky hair and stuff. Oh, that would be terrible. Oh, Jesus. What the fuck?
Okay.
Okay.
But the thing about Devil Survivor 2 is they're like, it's more lighthearted. Well, I don't know if that's exactly true, because as the main character, you see yourself get crushed by a fucking semi-train and yourself in a pool of blood. I don't know if that's exactly more lighthearted.
Nice.
Unless you're into, you know, unless your regular hobby is watching Cannibal Holocaust all the time.
Oh,
I don't know what exactly is, you know, lighthearted to you.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of, yeah, okay. Well, I really don't have, like, too much of an opinion of it, because honestly, like, when I just heard that Devil Survivor 2 is coming out, I'm like, ooh, okay, I should get it, and I pre-ordered it and stuff, and of course I got it. I did open the package, and oh my god, 90 pages for that fucking instruction manual?
Yeah, thick-ass motherfucker, huh?
Yeah, I was like, what? Okay, granted, like, half of it is in French, you know.
But you don't see instruction books like that. Fuck, even Vita games. I own 3 Vita games. Mm-hmm. You know, and none of them even have an instruction book. They're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, because we're everything done. Is digital, though. You know?
You know? Yeah. I'm like, dear Lord.
Yeah. It's too bad you can't print out, like, Vita books, like Vita manuals and stuff. That'd be cool.
Well, you know, it's all about in game tutorials these days and stuff.
Ugh, yeah. Useless in game tutorials. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least, you know.
Okay, so anyways, Devil Survivor 2, like, have you played any of the battles and stuff? Like, what makes this...
I played one...
What makes this different?
I played one battle. I really don't know. That one battle was a lot the same.
Okay.
Was a lot like the original.
So you still carry the DSs and stuff like that?
You actually... No. One difference is it's cell phones now.
So it's iPhones now?
No. they're like actual, like, flip phones.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
So, I don't know why, but they just are.
Okay.
So,
well, I have the game, so yay.
We'll have to see how it pans out.
Yeah. This is true.
Anything else? Mass Effect. Mass Effect 2 beat the Arrival.
Yes.
Now I understand why Shepard's going to be court-martial.
Okay.
I will say, though, I think he made the right choice.
Did you have a choice in that matter?
No.
Oh.
No. But I went the renegade route.
Really?
In it. Yeah, because there's a character who gets brainwashed by the fucking Reapers.
Uh-huh.
And it has that kind of quick time event that was introduced in Mass Effect 2, uh-huh. Where, you know, quickly you could, RT would represent renegade.
Mm-hmm.
LT would record, you know, would be
a renegade choice,
would be a paragon choice, mm-hmm. And it would be like so you could hug people and shit.
Mm-hmm.
What time for hugging people? Who would?
I know,
but I saw the renegade button and I just pushed it and he shoots the chick in the head, he just boom, ah, you know, because you know, should I tell him the story of the Arrival real quick?
I want to say no.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah. A lot of people are probably, you know, like, playing through, like, the Mass Effect series right now. Like, you know, like, yeah. From the beginning again, just to kind of relive all those experiences or just outright make a new character. So I wouldn't, like, yeah, let's true. You know, let's consider Mass Effect hands-off for, like, you know, like, we can talk about gameplay aspects of it, but not, like, specific storyline elements, sadly.
I will say that playing that game has me super excited.
Sweet.
That's BioWare will get you very emotionally involved in their games. Mm-hmm. They're very good at that.
Yeah.
And I am super stoked for it. And I played the demo, and even the demo got me super emotionally involved in their game.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain scene that kind of made me sad.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't say what it is in the demo.
Mm-hmm.
In a demo.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and then, you know, like I said last episode, I'm still agonizing over my choice.
Nice.
Miranda or Ashley.
Gosh. Yeah, I don't know. Who the fuck did I pick in, like, Mass Effect 2? Jesus Christ. I think I accidentally picked Garrus in Mass Effect 2. Yeah. And, of course, this is FemShep we're talking about here. The first game, it was Liara, which was interesting because, not to expose some spoilers and stuff, that decision, that kind of plot element and romance was actually addressed in the second game.
Oh, really?
When I was playing that one particular, you know, like DLC that... Oh. I'm not going to identify what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know which one you're talking about,
though. Yeah. Like, basically, like, it got addressed in that, and I was like, whoa, yay, okay, finally, like, there's a visible representation of, like, my choices from the first game. Hurrah.
Well, I'm super... See, that's interesting, because playing the demo felt a little lame.
Why?
One part felt lame. But this is not going to be in the final version, mind you. Mm-hmm. So it's not a complaint towards the game. Mm-hmm. Basically, it felt like... Oh my! It basically had me remake my Shepherd.
Aww.
In the demo. Mm-hmm. This is the demo,
right?
Okay, I don't think the actual game. I'm 100% sure the actual game will not do this to you.
Mm-hmm.
I remade my Shepherd, and there were a lot of weird choices. Like, you know, they were talking about the council and shit, mm-hmm. and Anderson, you know, basically did not even mention that he was on the council.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was like, he should be. But then I remember it's the demo. Because, and then the game even asks you, you know, what loss affected you the most, too. Mm-hmm. And it would be like, many have been lost in my journeys. Kaiden Alenko, Ashley Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically tried to get it as close to my game. But mind you, this was just the demo.
Right.
So so I doubt that will be the case in the main
game. No, absolutely.
So... Yes, I want to see, you know, why. I want to see how that affects. Anderson should be on the council.
Yeah, but there's nothing much like we can talk about like Mass Effect, because it's Mass Effect 3 is coming out within 2 days, or it's already out by the time this podcast is out. But
I'm binging on that day.
Oh, jeez.
My wife knows that. My wife knows that I'm not even going to do any homework. She's going to take my son to the film to see the Lorax or whatever. Mm-hmm. After school, so from the time I get home about 1 o'clock
mm-hmm.
to about 6 or 7 o'clock p.m., nothing but fucking Mass Effect 3. Nothing.
Oh gosh, I'm just imagining. I'm just imagining right now, like when I get home at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh my gosh, I sincerely hope that it's not going to be another 12-hour binge for me, because that has happened. Like I played from like. When I got home at like around 5:30 in the afternoon, I played all the way till like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You savor. Those are games that you take in and you fucking savor them.
Yeah.
You sit. And then I have to make it a point to beat Mass Effect 3,
mm-hmm.
savor it, but try to make as much time for it. So that way I can start on Tales of Graces. Because I believe Tales of Graces will probably be a longer game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's another game that I want to savor. So
that's kind of a rational, like, you know, and reasonable kind of expectation for Mass Effect. Because, I mean, Mass Effect isn't like a 100-hour, like, fucking experience.
No, they're not long.
Yeah.
Well, they are long games.
Mm-hmm.
But they have replay value. And what's going to be interesting is, in terms of the replay value, mm-hmm. of whether you should just play one game again or whether you should just start from the beginning
mm-hmm.
and go... I might actually do an experiment this summer
mm-hmm.
along with the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy. Mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. you know, going through all those games. So, mm-hmm. By the way, before we move on, I want to ask you a question real
sure.
quick.
Sure.
What do you think of this Colonial America setting that is being talked about for Assassin's Creed 3?
It is fantastic.
I was quite excited because I love U.S. history, and I love the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, super excited that they're going with that.
Well, you know what's funny is that, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody else with this and stuff, and it's like you can't really avoid making an Assassin's Creed game that is not steeped in a historical time period. Like, a lot of people were thinking, including myself, that Desmond is basically going to be the main hero of, you know, like Mass Effect, we were in Mass Effect 3 earlier, Assassin's Creed 3.
Right.
And it's funny, it's supposed to be, you know, the whole thing that was surrounding, you know, like Assassin's Creed 3 is the fact that it's going to be the end of the world. And the assassins are trying to prevent this. And I was kind of thinking to myself, how does that relate to something that a Revolutionary War? Hmm. You know, like, okay, bottom line is I'm not expecting this to be the only Assassin's Creed game in this thing. I think that it's safe to say that Ubisoft has figured out, wait a second, we can make two other games using the same engine, using the same character, you know, and continue the storyline, which I'm pretty sure this time around they're going to map out a lot better.
One thing that I will say about the Assassin's Creed game is their characterizations are just spot on.
Well, now they are. Like, you know, Altair was not very personable.
No. What they did with Ezio, they not only built a character that was extremely complex, mm-hmm. but they built a character that was steeped in his setting, mm-hmm. that his lifestyles were based on what happened in the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. So if they're going to do something with colonial America and the Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. I want to see a character steeped in that time period, in the history. Like, is he a colonist? Mm-hmm. Is he part of the? I doubt he'll be part of the British Army.
No, he's not. He is from the information that I've gotten and stuff that his parents are actually. One is actually like one of the settlers and stuff, and I think his mother is like, you know, part of the Mohawk Nation of like.
She's Indians. A Native American.
Yeah. So he's kind of half of both. And there's like a rumor that says that when you're young and stuff, yeah, that's kind of like how they teach you how to do like a lot of the basic stuff. But the most interesting rumor, and I think you're going to appreciate this, is that the new Assassin's Creed is basically a cross between the current gameplay of Assassin's Creed and Red Dead Redemption.
Right. That's nice.
Yeah.
Because I think Red Dead Redemption is one of the finest games ever made. Mm-hmm. I that game has still affected me on such a level mm-hmm. that a lot of games don't even come close to. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I am just... That's a good thing. That is not a bad thing.
No, not at all. So that's kind of like the details that I have. There was a rumor that he's using a tomahawk... that he's not going to have, like, the hidden blade, but further inspection of the actual box art and stuff reveals that he does have his hidden blade still. And I have to say, before we kind of, like, gush on this game, I do want to applaud Ubisoft, you know, despite of you know, all their missteps with pricing, that they handled the leak of the images and the screenshots extremely well.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like you remember how there was like an issue with like Black Ops 2 being like leaked too early and stuff and how like, you know, like Activision was threatening like this French company, you know, this French like media company, like, you know, like a press type site to, you know, to remove their privileges of reviewing right. games and stuff. And, you know, Ubisoft just basically rolled with the punches and said, yeah, well, yeah.
It's a preview of our rebuild.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I saw it.
Yeah, and they did a really good job with handling that, though.
I got to say, I have to credit them, even for Altair as much as we don't like him. Mm-hmm. I got to credit Ubisoft for tackling those time periods. Because mm-hmm. they're not time periods covered in gaming very much.
Right.
As, you know, when I remember when Assassin's Creed 2 was announced, mm-hmm. I was very, very reluctant on that game, remember?
Right.
I almost did not pick it up. You convinced me to pick it up.
Right.
And it's one of my favorite games of this generation. Mm-hmm. I just haven't played Brotherhood or Revelations due to, you know, the situation you have with Sakura Samurai. That there's more pressing games going on, I suppose.
Yeah, there are. There are way too many.
So the thing with that is I'm a little worried that, you know, that I won't have Brotherhood and Revelations done by 3. Because I really want to play 3.
Yeah. Now you do.
Yeah, now I do. Mm-hmm. If you were to ask me about Assassin's Creed mm-hmm. 2 and 3 if several years back, I'd say, fuck you. Well, back in 2007. Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny is that Revelations, out of all the Assassin's Creed games, really upped the quality level of like all the Assassin's Creed games. Now, a lot of people said, well, the gameplay is kind of the same as like everything else and stuff, which is true. But what's good about like Revelations is it has a very cinematic element to it that is like really, like, you know, really something that we've never seen in an Assassin's Creed game before. And thinking about seeing their progression from Assassin's Creed 2 to Brotherhood to Revelations and stuff, it's going to be interesting seeing how they apply all those lessons learned into something like a full-fledged, numbered Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. They're also very good at integrating actual historical events and people into that world. Mm-hmm. Like what they did with the Borgias.
Yeah.
Like the Borgias were essentially the main antagonists.
Yeah.
And if you actually look at history, mm-hmm. the Borgias were pretty much crime bosses that ran the church.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you base all my historical knowledge of the Borgias based off of the HBO drama, you know, Jeremy Irons is a pretty evil man.
Yeah. Well, the real Borgias weren't much better.
Yeah.
They were not much better, so mm-hmm. so, you know, but the character that Jeremy that he plays
yeah.
in the Showtime series, mm-hmm. my thing is wasn't he bigger in the like wasn't he a bigger dude?
Yeah.
In the set? Yeah, he was a pretty heavy guy, huh?
Yeah, he was. Isn't he playing the main bad guy of the second game?
In what?
In Assassin's Creed 2.
Jeremy Irons?
Yeah, I mean, that's supposed to be the same character.
Yeah, that's the same character.
What the fuck?
So
ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything else I've been playing?
Okay, well, Assassin's Creed 3 is good. Okay, we'll we'll check it out later. Move on.
we'll probably talk about it later on in the year.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
October 31st.
Speaking of which, I mentioned this on Twitter. October is becoming the new November.
It is.
There's one other game that's been announced that's coming out in October.
BioShock Infinite.
Yep.
Yay.
I can't believe it. I can't.
The fall's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. And telling you, this is going to be that year where no games are bad, like, that's coming out. Like, it's all going to be good, and it's going to be – there's going to be this huge parity of, like, scores because everything is being rated against each other.
Every game I've played that I bought this year, I have not been disappointed.
Actually, the last year also. Like, I was surprised when people rated, like, you know, like, Saints Row the Third, like, really high, and I'm like, you know, I dismissed it. I'm like, ah, no, it's going to be terrible, and then I played it. I'm like, oh, my God, this is the best game ever.
Yeah, yes. Saints Row the Third is a great game.
Yeah.
But again, it went to my backlog.
So
did Final Fantasy 13 too.
Wow. So then,
yeah, I don't know how that happened.
I know, right? I'm like, whoa.
Because I love that game. Don't get me wrong. I love that fucking game.
And you just tossed it like in the pile. I'm like, wow.
You know what happened is midterms are coming up. So all my game times got compressed, so I was trying to figure out all these quicker games to play.
Gotcha.
That's hence, you know, like Ultimate Ghost and Goblins, that's, you know.
And I'm just keep piling up, like, this stuff, like, you know, for games. And, you know, like, this like, backlog of games and stuff. And I'll tell you mine, like, once we're done with your stuff. Jesus Christ, we've been talking about your shit for a while now.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see, what else? I really don't think there's it. Oh, there's one game.
Mm-hmm.
That's Binary Domain.
Okay, so, all right.
We'll talk about that later, though.
Well, no, let's talk about it now, because, like, I'm, you know, like, I don't think, like, I honestly don't think, like, I have much to say about the game other than what you're probably going to say. So, okay, so I told you.
Because we're on the same page, right?
Pretty much, but I want to preface this by saying, I did tell you about this game. You told me about this game, that you were going to get it. And I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, you know, like, we've waxed poetic about, like, some of the ideas and stuff. Like, you know, maybe Yakuza Dead Souls was basically, like, the precursor to this because they wanted to learn how to do a shooter properly kind of thing, you know. But
right.
All I got to say is that Binary Domain, and this is why, okay, a few episodes ago, or maybe we didn't even, like, record it and stuff. I did tell you that I did not like Gears of War 3.
Yes, you've told me that many times, actually, since that game was released.
Many, many times. I like this. Like, the story wasn't enough for me to actually get hooked on the game. Like, I was like, I felt like a lot of the action sequences aren't as action-y as previous versions. And, you know, while Horde mode is good and the co-op is great, like, I felt like I've visited this world before.
Right.
You know. Now, this is a good example as to – this is actually a good case scenario as to why I feel that my views about Gears of War 3 are valid in some degree. Because I was thinking about this the other day, and I said, and by the way, in case people are kind of trying to catch up here, Binary Domain is basically a cover-based shooter in the same vein as Gears of War 3. I feel though that Gears of War 3, in order for it to be more action-y, doesn't necessarily need to do a lot of the stuff that this game does. And I'll we'll get to that later. But a lot of the action-y parts in Binary Domain are just that much more satisfying and made me want to come back to the world. But anyways,
it seems like enemies take more strategy to take down in this game.
Right. So do you want,
like,
yeah, so,
oh, go
okay,
ahead.
So I just preface everything, and I know I kind of cut you off and stuff. So now I want to put you on the spot because you love Gears of War 3. So
yes, but I like this game better.
Oh, look at that.
Here's the thing about Gears of War 3.
Mm-hmm.
Gears of War 3 ended that story. The thing about Gears of War, though, is that it did not explore the characters as much as it should have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's still a lot of unanswered questions about the Gears of War series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I feel that Binary Domain actually takes a richer approach.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is it adds in ethical values into that story, ethical themes.
Right.
You know, and it adds them pretty early on.
Right.
And I mean, the story has a lot of depth. Probably more depth than the original Gears of War ever did. Mm-hmm. Within two chapters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not kidding you. I'm not. And you know what? The cutscenes are very interesting. These are not, you know, boring cutscenes.
That's by the Yakuza team. They always make interesting cutscenes.
Oh, yeah. And the writing is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I love the banter between the various squad mates. Mm-hmm. I love the, you know, I love that Pentagon sequence,
mm-hmm,
where they're kind of in that war room.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I'm talking
about. Oh, yeah, totally.
That sequence was just executed perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this game has fantastic writing, mm-hmm, and it explores fantastic issues, mm-hmm, and it's something that Gears never even did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sure, all these reviewers who say, oh, it's the same thing as Gears, it's the same thing as all these squad-based shooters. No, it's not in terms of story. I actually give a damn about these characters, unlike a lot of squad games. A lot of squad games, Section 13 that you mentioned in the last episode.
Unit 13.
Do they give any of your squad mates personalities?
Not really.
Do you, your character, have personality?
No, you're a mute.
Okay. most squad-based games do not have personality characters. Or even FPSs, where you have a barrage team of characters, like Call of Duty, mm-hmm, when one of those characters get killed, the only reason I care they died is my help is gone.
Mm-hmm.
my help is gone. But otherwise, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Any of these characters in this game, and some of the ones I've just met, I care a whole lot more than I do in any squad-based or FPS shooter.
For the record, like, we could lump Mass Effect 3 into this.
We could.
Mm-hmm. Well, what? Okay, so one of the things that's interesting about your statement about Gears of War comparisons and this game is that, yes, I agree, the storyline is different. And actually, you can find a pull quote from Cliff Bleszinski that he even said that Gears of War was actually all about questioning whether or not war is a valid means of solution. And honestly, I never saw that in Gears of War. Like, I don't know about you, but this is not an anti-war game.
You know, that's funny, because the only times you get that is there's certain sequences where, oh, we feel, you know how, like, they nuke the cities with the Hammer of Dawns and shit? There's a sequence where Anya says, I feel guilty about it. We shouldn't have done it. But no, that's about it.
Yeah.
I never saw an anti-war message.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to have an anti-war message, don't put on a fucking chainsaw bayonet, for God's sake.
Yes.
There's nothing anti-war about it.
Mm-hmm.
If anything else, if anything is the theme of Gears of War,
mm-hmm,
it's that sometimes sacrifices have to be made,
mm-hmm,
in order to end the war,
mm-hmm,
no matter how big that sacrifice is.
Yeah.
That's if there's any theme in that, especially at the end of Gears of War 3. If you want to make Gears of War philosophical, there's your fucking philosophy there. Mm-hmm. But it's not an anti-war game by any means.
Yeah. So, okay, so back to Binary Domain. The, you know, because we actually never explained the plot. The plot is basically that there's an infiltration in the population in the United States where there are robots or cyborgs called Hollow Children that have kind of entrenched themselves into our society and even the upper echelons of the government. And, you know, like, and we're basically trying to stamp them out because there is a new Geneva Convention that was signed and ratified and stuff that basically prevented people from making realistic human AI, you know, / robots and stuff that basically, you know, looked and feel like humans. And what's interesting about, you know, the Hollow Children is that they don't even know that they're robots. And I found that to be like, wow, this is basically like Terminator, but like with a lot more a bit more of an interesting plot point, because
a little bit of Blade Runner.
Yeah. Totally. Yes. Yeah. You just reminded me of that. Yeah.
You know what? This game reminds me a little bit of Snatcher too.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
A little bit of Snatcher. I think mostly because of the designs of the robots.
Yes, yeah.
I think in Snatcher though, the robots were intentionally trying to infiltrate. Mm-hmm. They were intentionally, they did not, they knew they were robots. Mm-hmm. I think that was the point of Snatcher.
Yeah.
But in this game, you know, there's that whole level of emotional
involvement.
And then like they really do a good job of fleshing out your squad mates. Mm-hmm. Like they give them really fleshed out personalities, like Bo, mm-hmm. the big African-American guy.
Bo Tang.
Mm-hmm. Him and Dan, and then of course they add the, you know, the British guy and all that.
British guy, Rachel, and the Chinese Faye. Yeah, Faye, yeah.
Yeah, they all give them, you know, personalities. Like Faye is this very attractive, very beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But she has a very nonsense attitude though about it.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. How do you feel about those sections in between the action? Like when they have like conversations and stuff.
Oh, those are great. Where you increase trust.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they get to know you and you get to know them. Mm-hmm. Type of thing going.
Yeah. What's interesting is that this has that kind of feel of like the social links in Persona, like Persona 4, where the more they trust you, the better they do in battle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they will respond to your orders more so
mm-hmm.
if they trust you. Mm-hmm. But if they, you know, if they don't trust you, obviously, mm-hmm. they won't.
Right.
And it's not just about those answers. It's your actions in combat.
Mm-hmm.
Your actions in combat will affect this.
Right. Like if you're reviving them and stuff.
Yeah. If you go in and revive them, or if you accidentally shoot them, or even if you do certain actions quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a sequence where Bo Tang will be pushing a tank full of gasoline, mm-hmm. and you have to protect him.
Yeah.
And if that tank gets destroyed, his and Faye, well, I chose Faye for my squad mate, mm-hmm. as well as Bo Tang, their trust will go down.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be efficient in battle.
Right.
In order to earn their trust as well. It's not just about, you know, making decisions.
Yeah.
I don't see, one thing I don't understand from a lot of the game reviews is this is not original. I never felt, I'm like, Gears of War had nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
How is that not? I mean, maybe if you're referring to the combat, yes, mm-hmm. cover-based systems are not new by any means.
Exactly.
But this game...
And let's be fair. The Japanese have had a difficulty adapting to this genre. I mean, they're not, like, you know, like many different types of games have attempted this. Like Quantum Theory, I think, is one of those games.
Vanquished
is one of those games, and they haven't really fully captured what it means to be a Western, like, you know, to make a Western third-person shooter. And I was surprised because, like, the very first thing that I did when I played the game was do all the stuff that I did in Gears, and I was surprised, like, oh, I was able to do everything. But of course, there's so much more to this than just the Gears of War similarities in gameplay, you know?
Yeah, there's a whole lot more to it. I mean, the trust system. And then they give you nice varieties in action, in sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are sequences where you control a crane to drop, you know, you drop a fucking beam, bunch of beams on an enemy.
Or how about that water slide section?
Yeah, that section was fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, that section, or the section where you jump on the robot.
Yeah.
And then you shoot it, and you have to hold your balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, sequences like that are not found in squad-based shooters. Mm-hmm. So I'm not understanding why this game is getting knocked for not being original.
Exactly.
And again, yeah, it's again that double standard that I always bitch about. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I bitched about it for Armor Lore. I bitched about it about JRPGs. And I'm going to bitch about it again. I don't see, and I'm not being a total fanboy. I'm saying that there are some issues with this game. Like, I will say, do not play with the mic.
Yeah. No.
Do not play with the mic, because Bo kept getting pissed off at me for saying things, mm-hmm. when it was coming from, you know, from my TV. Mm-hmm. So don't play with the mic. The mic system does not work. It's broken. Mm-hmm. It's a cool idea, but it's broken. I'm sorry.
Well, one thing that you haven't even mentioned is the fact that you can upgrade your weapons, and, you know, and they have like their own experience point system and stuff. Well, not experience point system, but like, you know, just like something like the Resident Evil games, like you can upgrade like different various aspects of your, you know, your character and your weapons.
Yeah. Like you can, like there's a DNA type thing.
Mm-hmm. Nanomachines.
Nanomachines, yeah. You put the nanomachines together, so some might be more, you know, in defense. Some will increase your life.
A reload rate and stuff.
Reload, yeah, whatever. You know, it depends, right? Mm-hmm. Reload rate, life, whatever. You clump them together. You have to map them out carefully as well, right? And then you put them on your character, and it improves his skill sets. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you can find more improved versions, but then it changes the mapping. Mm-hmm. On the little grid, and you have to kind of change, you know, your nano machines.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost like Tetris blocks, but you can't like rotate them, and you just kind of like make them fit in this like, you know, like I think it's a 2x8 grid. I don't know. I kind of forgot. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also like the weapons, like the fact that you can upgrade your weapons. It's as if like the way that I describe it to people, it's like as if like they married all the advantages of like the customization system, like that you can find in like Resident Evil 4 and 5 with Gears of War. And with, like, some sort of, like, personality elements from, like, something like Persona 4 or Persona 3 or something like that.
Exactly. And you know what? Killing enemies is just not as simple in this game.
I actually feel that killing, like, shooting at the robots in this game is, like, highly gratifying.
Yeah, because it takes, like, a headshot will not kill a robot.
Yeah. But the thing is, too, that's interesting is, I don't know if you noticed this, but if you do a headshot on a robot, he turns around and starts shooting at his friends because he can't see.
Yeah. Yeah, things like that change the aspect of the game. Sometimes they'll put you in precarious situations, for example. Mm-hmm. You'll have a lot of robots charging at mm-hmm. you. And you cannot kill that many robots in that time. So what do? You shoot them in the fucking legs. Mm-hmm. It's situations like that that really add dimension and depth to this mm-hmm. game.
But also the weapons, the sound of the weapons, and just the stuff that's flying out of the robots as you're pelting them with bullets. I mean, that's just a completely satisfying experience, as opposed to basically shooting like a Lambent or, you know, like any of the enemies in Gears of War where they're basically bullet sponges and stuff. And you feel like you're shooting at a sponge rather than like, you know, a tangible target.
Or where it's too obvious, like Boomer. Mm-hmm. Boomer will be in the back, you know, basically the heavy weapons guy. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is take out the long shot. And mind you, I'm a long shot in mm-hmm. Gears, so I always use the long shot. Mm-hmm. And take out my long shot, headshot, oh, Boomer's done.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting, too, is there's an enemy in Binary Domain that moves really, really fast, like the fast, like running robots. And I was shocked the first time that I saw them, because he was right next to me as soon as he spawned, you know, because he was just walking and stuff like that. I'm like, what the fuck, you know? And I had to actually reevaluate, you know, a lot of my strategies, because in Gears, like, they do flank you, but they all generally like kind of walk at the same kind of speed. It's either that or slower.
Yeah. Yeah, the enemy variety feels more comfortable, right. I guess. Competent. And I say that because they actually feel different. Mm-hmm. It's not just as simple as holding a different weapon.
Right.
It's like they may have a different weapon, but the way they react is different.
Mm, yeah.
Like you said, the guy who has speed, you know, who's faster. You even have those annoying ass fucks with the chain guns and shit.
Yeah.
I mean that, you know, and they take, I mean, enemies have to be planned out. You have to plan out how to take out your enemies in this
game. Right.
Yeah. This isn't just, oh, headshot this guy, headshot that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Binary Domain is just, it's going to be the sleeper game of the year for me.
I think so, too. I wasn't thinking of picking this game up, and then, like, I played it, and of course, like, the first thing that I told you, like, when I texted you, was like, this is why Gears of War 3 sucks for me.
I've been reading reviews, and, you know, on, like, even Amazon, and one guy was saying, oh, well, Gears of War 3 is just a better game. It's a faster-paced game. It's an action-paced game. It has a lot more. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like Gears of War. I always have.
Right, and I like Gears of War 3. I just don't feel that it was, like, in terms of importance as far as playthrough, like, I'm not invested in the story enough to actually play through Gears of War 3 right away. In fact, I actually did that with Part 1 and Part 2. I actually bought them, but I wasn't too invested in the story, so I waited much later, and then I played it and finished it.
The thing about it is that Gears of War has a lot of interesting plot elements to it. It just, they don't explore them.
Right.
Like, I felt like, you know, they could have done, like, Marcus and his father, for example. Mm-hmm. They didn't explore that a whole lot.
Yeah.
They should have. I mean, you could say so towards the end, but it doesn't really give explanation to their past relationships or anything like that. You could also say the same about Dom and his wife. Like in the first game, he's looking for her, but remember in the first game, he's looking for somebody, but it doesn't tell you who.
Right.
And like, I remember not even caring. I didn't even know he had a wife till like the first Game Informer preview of Gears of War 2.
Funny.
I'm like, what? So, yeah, I mean, it's like they had these cool ideas for story, but they didn't develop them.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, it feels like they do.
Yeah, they do.
Like, I don't know if you saw the sequence where they're looking for this particular guy in Binary Domain. And they're in, like, a sushi bar. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, I'm past that part.
Okay. In that sequence, there's like a flashback of the main character, Dan, as a child beating a robot. Mm-hmm. And he said earlier that he's never liked robots. Mm-hmm. So I was like, holy crap. Now that's a good allusion to character development there,
mm-hmm.
to fleshing out who he is. I mean, why is he beating that robot with a baseball bat as a child?
Right.
I mean, Gears of War never did that. So to that person, I'm sorry. But Gears of War does not have emotional depth like this game does. And mind you, I'm not even done with it.
Yeah.
And I feel more emotionally connected to this game
mm-hmm.
than I ever have. It's kind of like how I feel about Xenogears compared to Xenosaga. Mm-hmm. Xenosaga is a longer series. Xenogears is one game.
Yeah.
But I felt more emotionally connected to Xenogears, mm-hmm. to those characters,
yeah.
than I ever did any of the Xenosaga characters. It's the same thing.
Yeah, well, how far are you in the game?
I don't remember. I'm almost done with chapter 2, I think.
Really? I'm further than you in that. Yeah, it's a really rewarding game, and the storytelling is just really, really well done. I mean, and the boss battles, holy fucking shit.
Those are good boss battles.
The Brumac fight is nothing compared to what you're going to face like in this game. Like, have you actually faced anything bigger than a Brumac in this game so far?
I faced a robot about the size of a Brumac.
Are you talking about the spider?
I just got to the spider.
Yeah.
That's way
bigger than a Brumac.
Yeah, I got to the spider. Yeah, I'm at the part where they're in, you know, after they escape from the spider. Mm-hmm. They're in that abandoned building. Oh, we're like, what the fuck?
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. But that boss battle was fucking crazy.
You got me excited for it.
What?
The boss battle.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And this game does use QuickTime events to a certain degree.
Yes, it does.
So, I mean, okay. That's not a bad
so,
thing.
Bottom line, we're going to finish the game at some point.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get as much done as I can, but then Mass Effect 3 comes
I'm
out.
I'm probably going to play as much of it as I can tonight after we stop recording and stuff. You know,
Walking Dead, though, goddammit.
I have that on, you know, I'm recording it, so.
That's a priority for me.
Well, I'm going to record it, so I'm going to watch it later, but, you know.
I'm recording it, too, but I'll probably watch it after this.
I see.
Because that series is so good.
Of course, so. All right, so anything else?
I am done.
Holy shit, we haven't gotten to me yet.
This is all our show's going to be.
Yeah, folks. Definitely.
Once we're done with Alex, we'll say goodbye and goodnight and go play games or something.
Yeah.
Or watch zombies.
No kidding.
All right, so what have you been playing, my good friend?
Okay, so, where am I going to start? You know what? I'm going to start on Uncharted Golden Abyss, because you probably haven't played that game, right?
I haven't played it yet. I have it, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, so I kind of alluded in the last episode that I like this game. I don't like it, of course, as much as any of the console versions, but I do like it, you know, to a different degree. I think that it's a very successful way to capture the Uncharted experience on a portable. And, you know, I guess a lot of reviewers were kind of annoyed by the fact that a lot of the gestures and stuff is kind of tacked on and all that stuff. But it's like, it's okay with me. It's like, it doesn't affect me with shooting. It doesn't affect me with, you know, like, I guess there's puzzle solving that's kind of requires to do this. And yes, I did get tired of like rubbing like the stupid, like freaking, what do you call this, charcoal, like on like, you know, some carvings and stuff, but it's like, not that bad.
Yeah.
You know,
well, how's the voice acting and stuff up to par at least?
Absolutely. In fact, they did motion capture the voice, the acting as well. Kind of like exactly what they did with like the full Uncharted games, you know? So it's pretty much Uncharted on a portable. It's just that I don't see how, because of that, like, I don't see how they want it to be the console version. Like,
so Nolan North's still doing his thing then?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's the same, you know, it's the same kind of character and stuff. And it's interesting because it actually occurs before the first Uncharted. So Sully, you know, still has, like, you know, some color in his hair and stuff like that, you know? So it's interesting seeing this part of his life.
So Elena's not in it, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, well, he met Elena like Uncharted 1, so that just follows.
Right.
You know, but he does have a new love interest here of sorts. But it's interesting, though, because, you know, it kind of begs the question, what'll happen to her, what, you know, in this series, like in the Vita versions? And if so, is she even going to appear in the home console versions? And a lot of people are already saying, oh, Uncharted 3 is like the last Uncharted. I'm like, you're a fool if you think Uncharted 3 is the last fucking Uncharted game. Just because they haven't announced Uncharted 4 doesn't mean they're not going to make it.
Well, usually they announce the Uncharted game about a year after the initial game comes out.
Exactly.
So, for example, Uncharted 2 was announced in December 2008, which was a year after Uncharted 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Uncharted 2 came out 2009, so they didn't announce Uncharted 3 till December 2010.
Yep.
So if you want to expect anything about Uncharted 4, wait till December 2012. So.
Yes. Yeah, and again, like, the shooting is still kind of is similar to like Uncharted 3 in terms of shooting and the wonkiness of it, but the best thing that I've ever experienced in playing this game is the use of tilt controls to fine tune your aiming.
Hmm.
So basically, like, for example, like I set, okay, admission, I did set the auto aim on because let's face it, like the game, the software to handle the aiming and stuff is not perfected yet. It's not to the level of Uncharted 3 or 2 or 1. But the auto aim is a good enough system where it works and it makes, you know, makes it still like a visceral kind of, you know, shooting experience. However, what's cool about that is that, you know, you can tilt the Vita ever so slightly to fine tune your aiming so that you can get those headshots like really, really well. So it's, and that's something that I hope will become standard in a lot of like shooters and stuff. Cause I mean, the PlayStation 3 has, you know, accelerometers in it and stuff, but it's just interesting like to be able to do that in a portable. And I felt like it worked really well, you know?
Yeah. I really want to play this. It's just, again, too much shit.
I have to say though, that it is a short experience. There are 30 chapters. It probably took me about about 10 hours or so to finish. So it's not that bad of a game. It's not that bad lengthwise.
Damn.
Yeah.
That is not long.
No, it's not. But again, like I said, it's still a really good game. It is still a really good Uncharted game. And, you know, I do give props. I want to give props to Sony Ben for making such a pretty, you know, such an interesting storyline. And the main bad guy, you know, is really compelling too, because he's one of those bad guys that's kind of not really that bad.
I see. You kind of feel bad for him.
Yeah. But there's actually two, so I'm not going to say which one.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll have to really, I really need to play it, but.
Play it when you're in bed.
Okay.
Like that's probably the best kind of, that's probably like how I'd suggest it and stuff. Just play it like when you're in bed or something like that. And cause that's how I played it. Like before I went to bed, I played several you know, chapters in Uncharted and stuff. And then of course I eventually finished it. So yay.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So I'll play it in bed. I don't know if remember, I'm not alone when I go to bed, so.
Oh, right. Well, you know, like, you know, that's the beauty of the Vita is you can always, like, kind of turn it on and off and stuff, like, whenever. So, I mean, you can always, sneak in some gameplay on your Vita and stuff from time to time, even at, you know, when you're at school, you know? So you can put a dent into it, seriously. And I'm okay with the length. The gestures, I'll have to say this though, is it the gesture directions appear on the middle of the screen. Don't be fooled, because you can actually do it on the corner,
right,
of the screen using your thumb.
Huh.
So like it'll say like, oh, like put your, like, you know, slash across the screen from the bottom left to the top right. You don't need to like put your pinky, your pointy finger, and like follow the motion exactly as it is. You just have to mimic it with like your thumb on the corner.
Oh shit!
Yeah, so that's totally fine.
Okay,
that's actually how I handled the QTE like boss battle near the end and stuff.
Oh, QTE boss battle at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
Pretty good. I was actually really interesting and stuff. Like the it's of course a QTE boss battle. But I think they handled that really well. Like, I would much rather do that than awkwardly, like, throwing punches and shit, like, you know, at the characters and stuff. It's the combat, the hand-to-hand combat in Uncharted was never its strong suits, and it's still not a strong suit here, so.
No. Yeah. No. But, you know, that series, they tried in 3. Mm-hmm. I think they did a good job of improving what they did before in previous games.
Yes.
So, but they still have a ways to go to perfect it.
Yeah, they do. And we'll see. We'll definitely see, like, if they learn a lot from experimenting with The Last of Us.
Yeah, The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm. The Last of Us.
Oh. Oh, damn.
So, other games. The big one I've been playing, other than Binary Domain, and obviously I've played that one, is an early copy of Street Fighter Cross Tekken, which by
you
of course,
son of a bitch.
And of course, by the time this podcast is out, it would have already been out for about several days.
God damn it.
By the way, I wasn't originally going to order it, and then I pre-ordered my PS3 version, and I actually pre-ordered my Fight Stick for the PS3.
Cool. I got the special edition.
Yeah, I got the special edition also because I think it contains like maybe 40 or 50 gems exclusive to the fucking game.
Oh, shit.
Like, Jesus.
Pac-Man!
Yeah, that's actually one of the main reasons why I got the PS3 version is all the secret characters. Because again, like what you said, like I like fun fighting games. And, you know, although I have to say though, playing as the Tekken characters in a different environment is very interesting.
Ooh.
because they do not play exactly like their Tekken equivalents.
God damn. Okay.
So, for example, Jin and Kazuya and Heihachi have, or actually more so Kazuya and Heihachi, have like a move where it's like, I think it's 1-1-2 or 1-2-1 or whatever. I'm using Tekken terminology. You don't do that for some of the characters. In fact, I don't think you do it for Jin or Kazuya and all that stuff. In fact, a lot of it is actually motions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so for example, like, and I think Jin does this too in Tekken. It's like forward, back, forward, and you press a punch button. He just, the whole, like, you know, multiple punches and stuff, and then a follow-up punch. It feels great playing the Tekken characters in this game.
In the Street Fighter environment.
Yes.
Because it seems like what they're doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mean exact same thing. What I mean is the exact same approach that they did the old Capcom versus SNK games. Mm-hmm. When you had Capcom versus SNK, were those characters with Capcom-like mechanics,
mm-hmm.
and then vice versa with SNK, you know, versus Capcom, where it was SNK-type mechanics.
Right. Well, what's interesting about this game is a lot more juggle-heavy.
Okay.
And Street Fighter 4 kind of had some juggles in there, but not to the same extent as like something like a Tekken. Because, you know, Tekken is all about juggling characters, right?
Right.
You know, and of course doing the 10-hit strings and stuff like that. But it's interesting that it almost feels in some ways, I mean, it still has the Street Fighter-y element to it, but it almost feels in some ways that it feels like Mortal Kombat because you're having to juggle people in the air so much and trying to keep them in the air for so long that it's like it's a different dynamic in a familiar kind of gameplay style. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the Tekken characters are just interesting because not only, I mean, there are elements of their normals and their special moves that you obviously can see, like, yeah, that is totally Nina Williams, or that's totally Lin Xiaoyu and stuff. But it's different because they're fixed on a 2D plane. It's just very different. And I actually heard from the grapevine that what Capcom is actually doing is they're kind of trying out this style, you know, of like kind of the way that they created or recreated rather the Tekken characters. And they said that whatever they learn from this particular game, they'll apply to maybe the next iteration of Street Fighter or whatever the next game is going to be.
Nice. Well, let's look at this roster real quick, Alex.
Okay.
You don't mind. Okay. So I'm not going to go through every fucking character.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fucking characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the characters that will be released with the edition on Tuesday, not the PS Vita characters,
mm-hmm.
not the 12 additional yes. characters, but it's got an interesting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not counting, you know, the guest characters, just
right. Of course,
the Street Fighter roster. We've got Ryu, Ken, Guile, Kazuya, Nina, King, Abel, Marduk, Chun-Li, Bob, Cammy, Julia. Okay. I guess I'll go through all of them. All those core ones,
yes.
Sagat, Haruang.
Harang,
whatever. Dalsim, Steve, Poison, Yoshimitsu, Hugo, Raven, mm-hmm. Ibuki, Kuma,
mm-hmm.
Rolento, Heihachi, Zangief, Lily, Rufus, Asuka,
mm-hmm.
Balrog, Law, Vega, Paul, Jurdi, and I can never say her.
Xiaoyu,
M. Bison, Jin, Akuma, Ogre.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, that's I'm a Street Fighter fan, and I am a Tekken fan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I grew up with both of those games, and I still am fans of those. Mm-hmm. I have the newest versions of each of those games. Mm-hmm. I even have Tekken 3D Prime on my 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very happy with this lineup.
Yeah, which... Actually, Ted, speaking of which, who's like one of my friends who's like really into fighting games, pointed out something rather interesting too. If you take a look at the entire Street Fighter roster, that is roughly how big the Street Fighter roster was in Part 4. The original Part 4.
Yeah, that is true.
Mm-hmm. And this is like twice that size, which is insane.
Well, let's see. Mm-hmm. I'm going to count here.
Oh, jeez.
So, I'm very curious. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious how big, because it is. I'm looking at the list right now. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, man.
Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, like the Tekken characters have quite a big variety to them, too. And it's funny because I have a friend who brought his copy of the game over this past weekend. And, you know, like we were playing it and stuff. And, you know, we were kind of messing around in the lab, you know, and you know, I was like kind of introducing them to the Tekken characters. And then he's like, wow, I didn't know you had so much knowledge of the Tekken characters. I'm like, yeah. In fact, my favorite, I have to confess.
Real quick, 19 characters on the Street Fighter side alone.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. 19. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Yeah, that's just Street Fighter alone. So the Tekken characters, that's another 19, mm-hmm. plus the 5 guest characters.
Yeah, for the PS3 version.
And then when the Vita version comes out, the additional 12.
Mm-hmm.
God damn.
6 on each side.
Yeah, 6 on each side.
Mm-hmm. And they're all going to be DLC characters. So.
So if you take away the 2 guests, by the time the Vita version comes out, and mm-hmm. this is just taking out the guests, the game will have 50 characters, 55 including the guests.
Minus 4, I think. Wait. How many guests are there?
There are 5 guests. Cole, Toro, Kurdro, Mega Man, and Pac-Man.
Yeah, okay, there's 5, yeah. Okay.
So by the time the Vita comes out, 50.
Wow. 50
characters.
That's like almost how much like Marvel vs. Capcom 2 had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so recently it was unveiled that the disc had some of the DLC on there.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
That is one practice of DLC I'm not a fan of.
Why?
Of it being on the disc?
Mm-hmm.
And then you download the code to unlock it?
Well, that's assuming that they're done on the disc.
Okay, so what are you asking me then?
What I'm saying is that even though developers are putting some of the assets on the disc, that doesn't mean that they're done. And this kind of infuriates me because a lot of people think like, oh my God, the DLC is on there. Why don't, you know, we're having to pay it to unlock it. No, fucking, you fucking idiot. No, the reason why they're there is because imagine this. Like, all the prologues and the endings of the characters were actually revealed to be on the disc, right?
Right.
The characters are probably still going to be a sizable download. You really want to download, like, all the fucking, like, character data, including the movies, onto your Xbox
PS3?
Like, really? And even, okay. like the character model data? Like,
right.
I don't want to do that. I would much rather, like, obviously for me, I would much rather have that information saved on the disc so that I, you know, so that all their character information isn't taking up space that I can save for my save files.
I see.
In this particular case, it was unveiled that a lot of the assets were and movesets are actually in the game.
Just like the character models themselves aren't on there, though, or something like that.
Well, the character models are on there. The character models are on there. Some of the costume data for some of the stuff they're selling is there. And all the prologue movies and the endings are there.
Okay.
Now, it's a fighting game, right?
Right.
What do you think is not included on that disc?
I have no clue.
The one thing that fighting game fans really, really hope that every single, you know, fighting game character has. Or
I have.
Okay, this is kind of like, you know, this is kind of vague. Balance.
Ah, okay.
The reason why the Vita version is coming out later in the year with all the characters, I'm you know, positing here, is the fact that they still need to balance those characters.
Oh.
Yeah. So therefore, that's why you have all that content on the disc.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like the same with the Jill Valentine Shuma Gorath thing, where people, like, you know, found out that, oh my god, they're actually on the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 disc, is because they're still trying to balance them out.
Yeah.
And imagine if, you know, for example, on the Vita, you had to download all 12 characters. What's going to happen to your 32 gigabyte memory stick?
You're going to eat the fuck out of it.
Exactly. Which is why what Yoshinori Ono and Capcom probably said, you know what, let's not release them as DLC for the Vita version. Let's just release all of the characters by the time, you know, for the Vita this fall. And then let's release that as DLC.
And then as for, it says Mega Man and Pac-Man are DLC.
Yeah, because they're probably balancing them out for the last minute.
Okay. So my question is, are they paid or no? I'm not going to bitch about it. No, just they're curious. Free. They're free? Okay.
Yeah, it's part of the exclusivity agreement. They're free downloads like about a week after the launch. But I'm guessing the reason why they're not available right away is because, you know, they're still balancing the characters out. I mean it's true that they're not going to be played in tournaments, but that doesn't mean that they can just slack off and be like, oh, let's just release it, like what they did with like fucking like all the guest characters in like Soul Calibur 2. Being all unbalanced. I like and Link. Shit. Well, yeah, but once you played Link, you only played Link like in Soul Calibur 2 for the GameCube because he's the most powerful fucking person there.
I still use Taki.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. But this is what I'm saying, though, is that, you know, like, even the media, like, that's kind of like what the media is doing right now. They're like, oh, my God, all the content's already on the disc on the 360. I'm like, yeah, so? You know, like, there are valid reasons as to why developers put DLC on discs.
I don't think people understand it, though. Well, yeah. Well, I didn't until you explained it to me.
Yeah. But
I'll accept it because I'm objective.
Mm-hmm.
And being objective is accepting the truth. So if that's the truth, that works for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying, is that you can't really, like, you can't be mad at something like, okay, we're putting, like, DLC on the disc and stuff. It's, you know, it's, like, what are you going to do? Like, next thing you know, you're going to find, like, a hot coffee mod, and then you put the entire industry in peril again. Thanks. You know? Like, now, like, you have, like, hidden content that you can't even, like, fucking... you know, talk about and stuff. I don't know. But, okay, back to the actual game. I really enjoy it. And, you know, like I said, my friend and I actually went into the lab as far as, like, Street Fighter go, like, the characters go. And I have a pretty good grasp of Nina Williams, although I don't want to main her. Like, I'm always, like, a Lin Xiaoyu type person. Lily is pretty good. Poison, I don't know. Since I have, like, transgender friends, and Poison is one of my favorite characters in, like, the Final Fight series, I kind of, like, have a soft heart for that character, so I'll probably try to make do with how she plays, even though it's kind of difficult to control.
Poison is transgender?
You did not know this?
No, I did not.
The reason why... God, okay, this is going to be like a whole other issue. When the game got released here, Poison was basically like a pre-op transgender person in Final Fight. And the reason for that is like the boss from Capcom USA said that, oh, well, she's not really, you know, she's not really a girl. She's like transgender. And they're like, well, pre-op, post-op, pre-op, because, you know, I guess like the guy had a problem of, like, you know, the main character is like beating the shit out of girls.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So in Japan, you know, they kind of said that she is post-op, and I'm like, okay, there's this kind of confusion as to what her real, you know, whether she's pre-op or post-op. And then Yoshinori Ono basically said she's a post-op, you know, transsexual. And I'm like, what? Okay, so how are you guys determining this? And, you know, long story short, she is transgender. She is a transsexual, actually. I think she is post-op by Street Fighter Cross Tekken. But again, Capcom will not confirm nor deny these allegations.
Really?
Mm-hmm. In fact, I don't even think they know.
So no one really knows what Poison is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you this about my opinions on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
King on Tekken, King, Kazuya, Asuka, and Jin,
mm-hmm.
and Lily, they're all in it.
Yeah.
And Julia, that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the Street Fighter side, you got fucking Ryu, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ken. You got Rolento, who I used to love in the Alpha games.
Uh-huh.
You also got Akuma, and you got Balrog.
Mm-hmm.
Works for me.
Well, what's interesting about this game, too, is that when you play a certain pair of characters on the arcade mode, and usually it's the people they're right next to, they have special storylines associated with them. So, for example, Poison and Hugo are right next to each other in the select screen. If you pick both of them, they have specialized intros, and they actually have specialized rivals, and they have a specialized video that plays in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. And that only happens if you pair up people who are supposed to be paired. You know, now, I haven't beat the game with two different characters who are not the same team, but it's rather interesting seeing that they actually took the time to do that for every single pair of characters on screen. You know?
Hmm.
So that's always interesting. Maybe they have individual endings. Maybe, you know, I can't really confirm that. But
right.
It's really fascinating that they're actually putting a lot more work in their endings compared to something like Soul Calibur 4 with their fucking arcade mode. Ugh. Have you beat that game, by the way, in arcade mode? Yeah.
Is Soul Calibur 4?
5, sorry.
5, I haven't. Oh, on arcade mode, yes, nothing happens.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Virtua Fighter is guilty of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why Virtua Fighter tries to have a story with, you know, Duro being a clone and all. You know, you read the instruction books and there's this overly complicated story about the evil corporation and, you know, Jackie and Sarah Bryan's parents, and
mm-hmm.
nothing of the sort happens in the game.
Yep.
It's just like they're just there fighting.
Yeah, totally. That's kind of like how I feel about that series. It's kind of like, yeah.
What? Why? Does it even have a story?
No, it doesn't. Well, let's not kid ourselves. But okay. Yeah, but that's kind of like my point, though. It's like Soul Calibur 5. Oh, arcade mode. Yay, ending. None. Like, I just spent, like, 6 battles fighting people and beating, like, Nightmare until, like, my freaking fingers are, like, bleeding. And then you're not giving me an ending.
Right.
I mean, yes, I guess you can play story mode, but shit, no. You know, imagine you're in the arcade and your only prize, you know, for finishing the game is thank you for playing, game over.
Right.
That's bullshit.
That is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying this game puts effort into it.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think it's partially because when Yoshinori Ono saw the enhanced, like, kind of story mode that Mortal Kombat had, like, he probably got, like, a little envious and be like, you know, let's do something about the storyline.
Doesn't even Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 have, a sort of story mode?
Yeah, when you finish the game in arcade mode and stuff, you basically like get an ending for each of the characters.
No, there's another mode in it.
Oh, Heroes and Heralds?
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't tried that one, actually.
I haven't tried. But it always opens with this comic book.
Well, the game has a storyline. I mean, the whole purpose of like Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is that Galactus is going to basically eat the Earth.
Okay.
Or destroy it, in this case.
Okay, well, here's Heroes and Heralds is a single-player and multiplayer team-based mode where players earn new abilities with upgrade cards, customize their characters with new powers, and compete in factions as either the heroes defending Earth or as one of Galactus's heralds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so bottom line, like, I really like Street Fighter Cross Tekken. The engine is actually fairly improved. Like, the rendering of, like, the Street Fighter characters is, you know, slightly improved. But the highlight of it is really seeing the Tekken characters rendered in you know, the Street Fighter engine and stuff. And the action is fast-paced. Now, I have to say that I haven't fiddled around with the Pandora system, nor have I fiddled around with the gem system.
Okay.
That'll come once I actually physically get the game.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I'll probably fiddle with it too, so.
Yeah. So that's my experience with Street Fighter Cross Tekken. But that's not the only game I've played, though.
Let me bring up a point. Is it me?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Namco Bandai just releasing a lot of stuff lately?
Probably it's you, because I never really noticed them.
Well, let's see. Soul Calibur 5, excuse me. Soul Calibur 5, Tekken 3D Prime Edition, Tales of the Abyss port, this Street Fighter vs. Tekken, Cross Tekken,
That is not them.
Well, technically not, but they were involved.
They weren't, actually.
They were not involved.
Nope. Basically, the only thing that Namco was involved with in this game is licensing of the characters, but they had absolutely no say as the representation of any of the Tekken characters.
Okay. And then of course, Tales of Graces F.
And probably Dark Souls. You can probably lump that in there, too.
Dark Souls came out... Well, I meant the last 2 months.
I see.
Dark Souls was back in what? October?
I guess.
I think? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Yeah, they've been... I guess they've been pumping out a lot and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Namco Bandai. They're a good company. And I like them because they really stick to their roots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do one thing that Nintendo does.
Mm-hmm.
Is they like to reference, you know, be self-referential in their history, which, like with Smash Brothers, Nintendo does a lot.
Right.
Or even in the presentation of their consoles. Namco does this a lot. Mm-hmm. They always have done that.
Right.
Remember Galaga in the beginning of the Tekken, the original Tekken port for the PlayStation?
Uh-huh.
Remember how you could play Galaga?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've always done that.
Mm-hmm. Remember Ridge Racer is also coming out next week, too, or this week.
Oh, goddamn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'll be passing on Ridge Racer, but still, that's still a lot of Namco stuff.
Well, what's interesting, though, is that Ridge Racer by itself sucks. Like, as far as, like, because there's not a lot of tracks. But for a limited time, if you buy it on day one, they will release, like, free DLC for it, like, along with your pre-order, which actually adds more tracks and more cars. So if you're going to get Ridge Racer later down the line anyway, I would get it right away at launch.
I don't plan on getting Ridge Racer.
At all?
No. You know how I feel about racing games?
Okay, fine.
I'm
just saying, because, like, you know, like, that DLC is not going to be free forever.
Okay. And this is for the Vita, right?
Yes.
You know. Yeah, Ridge Racer. I don't know. Never been a fan of it.
Ridge Racer.
It's Ridge Racer.
I'm basically referring to the time when Kazuya Rai basically said that.
You mean made an ass of himself?
Yeah. Of course, the giant enemy crab meme.
Yeah. Oh, accurate battles from Japan, which feature giant enemy crabs. I didn't know such a species existed.
Yes. Oh, man. Okay. So, all right. So I played that, and I beat Tachimai Katamari.
Nice.
Only 8
left. Another Namco Bandai game.
Yes. Okay. All right. I Shinobito 2, which is another Namco Bandai game on the Vita.
Oh, God.
Yeah. They are kind of releasing a shit ton of, like games, huh?
The last month, couple months. Jesus Christ, Namco Bandai.
Yeah. And Ni No Kuni at the end of the year?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it'll slow down.
Maybe. So, all right. Tachimai Katamari. Very short. 8 levels. For the main quest, I mean.
God damn.
Yeah. But downloadable, it's $25. And it's $30. So it's still not bad. But you have to be a real fan of Katamari in order to justify those 8 levels. And I mean, you know, you get like challenges from people thanks to Nier, you know, like where they say, oh, beat my record and stuff like that. You know, like this is the size of my Katamari. You know what I mean? But it's like, it's not enough. Like, I feel like there's got to be a lot more to this Katamari game. Like maybe there's like 15 levels or something like that. Maybe it'll justify it. But like 8 levels and some side missions here and there, it's kind of like, eh. Not really, you know. And then, you know, I played some other games like, you know, Escape Plan, which is from the guys who made Fat Princess.
Yeah, I want to hear, you said in the last episode that you were not keen on this game. And a lot of people seem to like it. Now, I haven't played it and have no opinion of it thus. So I'm curious to see what you have to say about it.
It's kind of this weird kind of puzzle hybrid and stuff. Basically, you control one of these two guys who are basically trying to escape this kind of prison or something like that. And the way that it works is that, you know, you utilize the touchscreen capabilities of the Vita, both the front and the back touchscreen, in order to kind of make things happen. So, for example, like if there's kind of like a door that's closed, that's kind of like flush against the wall, and it's a strictly 2D experience. 2D meaning like it's, you know, just left to right kind of thing. Like, for example, if there's a door that's closed, it's kind of like on the wall. If you tap the back of it, it actually like opens up and it becomes like kind of like a platform. You know what I mean? So you can kind of, and then you can make your character walk by basically swiping left to right, like across him. And then you basically tap on him to basically make him stop. And most interactions are basically gesture based. Now, I just don't. The puzzles are kind of a little bit simplistic, even at like maybe 7 puzzles in and stuff like that. And I've actually gotten to a point
in where... In stark contrast to, say, something like Mighty Switch Force, yes. Mm-hmm. Where that game gets difficult rather quickly, I felt.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's got to be a perfect balance for that. Because, like, right now, I'm just kind of like, okay, well, there's that character. I'm making him walk through this stuff. And there's that kind of thing that you got to avoid. It's almost like Limbo, but in very slow movements.
That's not good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of has that black and white-ish kind of feel, but not like kind of Limbo where it's like, you know, shadowy and all that stuff and dark.
Now, black and white, you refer to the old Peter Molyneux game or no?
No, I'm talking about just the color palette.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, for example, like, you know, Limbo is just really like, you know, different like contrasts of like black and white. You know, that's that whole game pretty much. But yeah, in Escape Plan, that's pretty much the same thing. I mean, granted, it's like $14, but it's like, I don't know, like between that and, I already forgot the name of that game. What is it? The Blob game. Let me open my Vita.
What game? What game is it?
It is the Mutant Blob Attack game. You know, which is like $8. Like, I actually found...
called it Tales of Mutants or something.
Yeah, I know. I fucked up on that one. But it's like the Mutant Blobs Attack. I felt that was actually a much more satisfying experience at $8 compared to that. Now, okay, two different games. But it's like, I don't know. I just didn't find it satisfying, like, an experience. But we'll see. I have to play. I'll play it more and stuff, and I'll probably be able to give you an opinion of it.
Which you should do with Sakura Samurai, but well, that's another story for another day, Alex.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
No. Well, I don't, to be fair, I know nothing about Escape Plan. I have heard of it, and I heard people love it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're kind of keen, not too keen on it.
Not the best first impression, no.
Okay.
Cool art style and everything, but no, not for me. I want to take the time right now to talk about the Vita though. And I feel that there's a lot of potential in this platform. And I just wish that, you know, a lot of the games that are coming out on it are unveiled soon. And I'm talking about what has already passed, which is March 9th's kind of Vita Heaven webcast, where they're actually going to talk about the games that are in development for the platform.
Maybe we'll get a release date for that Persona 4, the Golden U.S. Yeah. release date.
I hope so, because I think the fighting game is coming out in August.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, the fighting game, is it for...
It's probably for both PS3 and 360.
No, yeah, I thought it was for the Vita, but I guess not.
I don't know if it is. And they haven't announced anything for the Vita as far as like any other fighting games other than, of course, Street Fighter Cross Tekken. You know, so we'll see. Like, I was actually hoping, like, you know, Namco to be like, surprise, we have Soul Calibur 5 on the Vita, because I would have bought that. But no, nothing of that sort. But anyway, so yeah, so I wanted to kind of talk about the Vita, because Nier is a really good feature of the Vita.
Yes, Nier is interesting.
Yeah, because now I can actually see like who's around me. And you know what's funny too? Is that, you know, because I work in Thousand Oaks and stuff. And I work, you know, like I travel between like, you know, LA County and like Los Angeles and Thousand Oaks and stuff. Ventura County, basically. And, you know, Nier basically works on a periodic basis, trying to get people and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I was surprised, like, somehow between that travel time, I basically encountered, I think, Robert Bowling's, who's the community manager for Infinity Ward, PSN tag, his PSN name. And I'm like, 402IW. Wait a minute.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, you know, and I'm like, and I know that he lives like in Ventura County. And of course, like, you know, Infinity Ward is in Encino, which is kind of in between LA and Ventura. But it's kind of surprising that, you know, I found him on my Vita. And it even said there, it's like, oh, 402. And I found like everybody who I've encountered before. And I found that to be absolutely fascinating, that to know how many people are around you playing what games, you know, over the past few days or something like that.
Yeah. That is interesting. I look at mine and I don't live in the most populated area.
Mm-hmm.
My county has around close, maybe over 150,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and them, that's actually not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I found about 90 people playing the Vita.
Wow. Is that like in every single time that is it like the entire out and about data, or is that local data, like for where you live?
Local data for where I live.
That's actually really a lot more than I have, because I have about 72 people in my within a 10-mile radius.
God damn.
Mm-hmm. That's why I was asking if it was like an out and about data, because out and about is basically like the total number of people that you have encountered, you know, throughout the entire life of your Vita.
Now, I don't have 3G.
I see.
I don't have 3G, so I'm going to have to go to another Wi-Fi spot and
mm-hmm.
kind of hook it up there and see mm-hmm. how many people are near me and all that good stuff. So. Yeah,
but that's definitely like one of the best features of that system. And it's like, it really changes your perspective on portable gaming in a way, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think one thing that we should talk about is I think the 3DS and the Vita are really unique handhelds.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, the 3DS has its own thing and so does the Vita. They're mm-hmm. both trying to do different things.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing with the Vita and the 3DS is
mm-hmm.
with the 3DS is with its what is it called? Street Pass.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Street Pass. So
mm-hmm.
so with Street Pass, you can cross people who basically have different Miis and exchange their Miis and all that.
Mm-hmm. At a very close proximity, though, like within 20 yards.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty cool feature. I mean, I don't know. I've had my 3DS in my backpack within a case, and I thought the Street Pass wouldn't reach it.
Mm-hmm.
But it does.
Yeah.
So it's all good. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, it's really, you know, it is a good feature, but it's like I found like in high populated areas and stuff that it breaks. Like, you know, like I was in a Street Pass meetup like last month and stuff, and... You know,
I have something interesting to tell you about that. I've been forgetting to tell you about that meetup.
Yeah?
Okay. On my YouTube channel, there's a guy that I know called Lone Wolf Jedi.
Okay.
And he's been one of my longtime supporters. And he and I actually did a video, I think maybe back in January, mm-hmm. a review of the TV series Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Of the first four seasons. And he told me that he got your Mii at this meetup, and I know he's in that area, in the Los Angeles area.
What? Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's all, I think I got Alex. And I go, how did you run into Alex? He said, well, there, you know, I'm in the Los Angeles area, and there was a meetup, and he mentioned the exact date that you went on yours.
Interesting.
And I put two and two together, and like, oh, shit.
Did he find my Mii? Because the greeting...
He said he said he got your Mii.
Because the greeting for my character, or for my Mii, is basically gamerhorizon.com.
Yeah, he said that's... Yeah, he basically got a gamerhorizon.com.
Hilarious. That's funny.
Yeah, that was small world.
Yeah. He probably didn't know what I looked like, of course, but, you know, whatever.
It's all good. Yeah, he didn't know who you were or anything like that. And he's all, was that Alex? And I go, yeah, he went to one of those things.
Yeah, he probably went to the exact same one that you were in.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Yeah, the Mario Kart tournament. I'm actually going to go next month, too. But
maybe.
But anyways, it breaks in high populated areas.
It breaks.
Yeah. So like Ted, who's, you know, one of my close friends, I didn't even get his Mii until he came over yesterday. He was part of that meetup.
Oh.
And he was right next to me.
Huh.
Yeah, it's because basically like the 3DS freaked out that it was like getting too much information and he can't sort it out. And so it's like, all right, well, and you can only get like 10 at a time for Mii Plaza. So I had to go through all 80 people there. One at a time. Damn. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said too.
A lot of Mii's.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's still cool because it fosters like community and stuff. And that's kind of like how a lot of game consoles are going to survive is the community and stuff. And
yeah,
but you know, the glorious PC Master Race has been kind of at my door recently because they've been telling me that they're all predicting the death of the console again. Jeez.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. It's like my friend who's like into Skyrim, he's like, I wish consoles that weren't around. I'm like, well, I'm glad you think that way because you probably won't be able to experience a lot of the shit that you enjoy in consoles like Mario and Zelda, which you really like. Yeah, so, and I doubt the Japanese will just jump on PC development because, you know, there's so many Japanese PC developers out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with, you know, such mainstream titles as Katawa Shoujo and, you know, Yi's Books 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
They're just dying to develop for PCs.
Yeah, I know. Final Fantasy, oosh, you know, such a great PC game.
Oh, yeah, that Final Fantasy. You know it's a great PC game, too?
What?
Sonic CD.
Oh, yeah, you know what's funny? I seem to remember getting that game from, like, a Jack-in-the-Box promo back in the 90s.
What?
Yeah, they gave it for free.
That's okay. The fuck?
For the PC. That's how much worth that game is.
Okay, you got it out of like a kid's Happy Meal or some shit.
No, it was part of their promos. If you order a combo, you get Sonic CD for free. For the PC.
I wouldn't know. You know why?
Why?
My town just got our first Jack in the Box.
Holy shit.
Back in 2009.
Nice.
And then we got our second one last year.
Awesome.
I don't really like them though. Well, so yeah. I never go to them.
Yeah, I stopped going because like my freaking like heart rate like got all crazy and stuff.
Their hamburgers are disgusting. But that's just, maybe it's the food snob that my wife's turning me into.
Probably.
Because she, you know, she's studying to be a chef and stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah, you're going to be like the next cooking mama.
Cooking mama. Oh, shit. Yeah. You know, it's a good, you know what game I should get my wife?
What?
There's that video game on the fucking, on the import PS1 on PlayStation Network.
Mm.
And it's called Tatayaki Grill or some shit.
What?
Yeah, all you do is grill meat in the game.
Oh my gosh.
It's on, you know, the PS1 import feature on PlayStation?
Yeah.
It, you just grill meat in this fucking game.
What the fuck, dude?
That's Japanese games are fucking weird. I mean, you know, and it's in the same category, you know, it's in the same section with Choaniki and such, you know, sensible wonders, you know, so.
Classic
Choaniki.
Yeah. So, okay.
Why don't you, real quick, why don't you tell them what you were going to do to me with the original games of me? It was initiation process.
Oh, yeah. Remember? There was like an initiation process where we force every new member of the site to basically go play Choaniki and then play Mad Dog McCree 1 and 2.
You guys were obsessed with Mad Dog McCree for the longest time.
Yeah. Even Ted was like, you have to go through this process. I'm like, I own the game. You have to go through this process.
Mad Dog McCree.
Yeah, Mad Dog McCree, which, you know, we took like maybe several months to like finish.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, on a live stream, mind you.
Yeah, you know what we need? We need more of those shitty live action gun games.
Yeah, we do.
More ports of them, because there are a ton of them from the 90s.
Yeah, I like Drug Wars.
You know which one I liked?
What?
Cops, the arcade game, based on the show, Cops.
Well, Drug Wars was kind of like that.
Well, because Cops, I remember it was a, like, you know, it was in a car, like, arcade cabinet.
Oh, and, yeah.
And then you had a gun and, you know, it had bad boys running around, you know, playing.
Playing in the background, yeah.
Yeah, bad boys, bad, yeah.
Well, it's funny because, like, okay, so Drug Wars is interesting because, like, you know, I really liked that game somehow. Like, in the, you know, when I was in the arcades and stuff. You know, it's between that and Street Fighter, of course. You know, makes sense, right? what do you call this? And so, when I moved to the United States, I found a copy of Drug Wars for, like, $7. I was like, oh, my God, this is such a steal. And I popped it in, and the quality was so shitty. Because it was, like, all on a CD-ROM. It's not, like, Laserdisc and stuff. And DVDs weren't fucking famous at the time. So I'm like, what the fuck is this? It's so cool. Either way, I'm just going to deal with it.
Oh, shit.
Wow. I was desperate to play that game. Incredible.
Incredible. They, you know what they, you know what I want a port of this gen before it's over?
What?
Night Trap.
Oh, gosh. I thought we were going to say Space Pirates.
Oh, Sewer Shark, dude.
Okay, we're just, like, grasping for, like, fucking CD-ROM games at this point. They do.
There's
have,
nothing wrong with that,
they,
though.
They do have Seventh Guest on the iPhone.
Okay, Seventh Guest was not a bad game, though.
So you were trying to point out bad games. Okay.
Yeah, bad games.
Way of the Warrior. Naughty Dog's, one of Naughty Dog's first games.
Oh, God.
3DO.
Yeah, I know that game, sadly. what about I'm trying to think. It's just there make your own video with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
And CNC Music Factory.
Oh yeah. Oh, and Crisscross.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay, why are we like doing this? I'm trying to like finish like what I've been playing here. Jesus.
Because that's what we do.
I guess so. Tangents.
Tangents are our staple.
Yeah.
Continue, though.
Okay. Alan Wake's American Nightmare, haven't played.
Okay.
Which sucks, because I heard that it's really good. I have it purchased. It's on my Xbox. It's installed. So I just need to freaking plop it in. Oh, and Azura's Wrath.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
I'm almost done with the game.
Oh, damn.
Only took me like about 6 hours. But the storyline's it's pretty good. Like, it's like, okay, this game is not hiding the fact that it's supposed to be an anime.
Right.
It even has like the intro bumper, like the commercial bumpers, and the
I remember that from the demo.
And to be continued at the end. And they have credits for every single chapter.
Oh shit.
And you play through like the title screens. Like, when you start the game and stuff, you have, like, the credits and stuff, and then you get to, like, a title screen again, and it says press start. I'm like, I just pressed start earlier, but okay. I'm, like, really confused the hell out of me. I was like, what the fuck is this? Okay, a lot of people think it's, like, all QTE. It's not all QTE. And a lot of people think that there is no win condition. There is no fail condition. There is a fail condition. There are three main parts of the gameplay. There's the shooter part, which is kind of like Panzer Dragoon, which basically has Asura basically punching a whole bunch of lasers from his fists.
Right.
Explain that to me. and the other part, which is the kind of beat 'em up section. Now, the beat 'em up section is very simple. It's only like really three buttons or four buttons. Circle is attack, just only one button for attack. X is jump. Triangle is for like the for moments where you have to kind of circle, I mean, triangle or circle for like moments where if people are trying to like shoot missiles at you and you want to throw it back, it'll slow down time for a little bit. And then you have to press the button in time with, you know, before impact.
Right.
And an R1 is dodge.
Huh.
That's it.
Interesting.
But you're always constantly fighting like, you know, like huge things. Like up to the point when this is not really a spoiler because you do this in the beginning of the game, you know, to set up the kind of like the storyline. You basically fight something the size of a planet.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And if you thought that, you know, like I think it was like chapter 3 or 4 that, you know, the fat Buddha that you're fighting against and stuff, like in the demo also, that was a pretty big thing. That is, you know, there's something bigger later.
Fuck.
Yeah. So this is kind of like a mix of like Fist of the North Star and Dragon Ball.
How is the story?
The story is actually really good. And the story is that somebody framed Asura for the murder of the emperor and their kingdom. And so therefore he was banished to Earth, you know, left for dead, basically. And, you know, like basically like it's because like this guy named Deus, which is like one of the eight, you know, kind of guardians and stuff of the world, basically wanted to kind of do like something called the Great Rebirth, which is basically killing like the Goma, which is this kind of force that's kind of inhabited the Earth and stuff, and from time to time it comes out like a lot more powerful than before. So you know, and it's, and Asura is just kind of pissed off because, you know, they murdered, you know, his wife, and they're basically put, you know, his daughter, who's basically this kind of, it's almost kind of like she channels energy from the Earth, you know, to like the deities and stuff, to the guardians rather. And the reason, right, why I'm saying deities and gods is because these characters are based off of gods, like Buddhist gods and stuff. And that's kind of like the storyline. So basically that's why that's why Asura is like really pissed off, is because of that particular reason, is that his wife got murdered and his daughter is now kind of enslaved, and he's trying to redeem his kind of, you know, his, you know, basically it's a tale of vengeance, and it's rather interesting, like the storyline elements to it. There's some like, you know, kind of unanswered things so far with the storyline, but it's interesting because they don't hide the fact that it is like pretty much an anime. Like
it's the first season.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see if it is the first season, because I still have to finish the game.
Okay.
But I think if I plow through it tonight, I can finish that game.
Okay.
Yeah. And mind you, the DLC is hilarious because the one of the DLC packs is basically Ryu, and it basically turns like, you know, Asura's Wrath into Street Fighter 4.
What?
Yeah. You basically fight Ryu from Street Fighter 4 with Asura, with the same meters and health and all that stuff. And Ryu has like the Street Fighter 4 meters and super meters and stuff. And yeah.
You fight him or you fight as him?
You fight as Asura.
That's interesting.
And you fight Ryu. And the other one is just straight up like just an acknowledgement that, hey, yes, this is an anime and stuff, and we're just putting like, you know, QTE elements on it. There's an actual produced anime that has Asura in it, and it's animated. It's an actual anime.
And really?
It's DLC, and they're putting QTE elements in it, and there you go.
Oh, a modern-day Dragon's Lair.
Pretty much.
Well, sounds good to me.
But again, though, I can't stress this enough. It's not worth $60.
I'm going to wait for it to price drop.
$40-$50, yes.
I think it'll price drop rather quickly.
Yeah, it's one of those games that just doesn't seem like it's going to stay at $60, you know?
Like it, like how quick like something like Shadows of the Dam dropped.
Yeah, and well, actually, you know what's funny is both of those games are Unreal Engine 3 games. Like, Asura's Wrath is actually an Unreal Engine 3 game.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and it's like, what? You know, and no, it's not, you know, it doesn't have, like, grind. Like, well, actually, it does have grind, but it has some really interesting elements to it that they use and stuff, so.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money Capcom is expecting from this game. But yeah, it's definitely very niche.
Yeah. Oh, niche games are great.
They are. They are. So that's one game. Syndicate.
Yes, let's talk about Syndicate.
Yeah, Syndicate is a game that is basically Deus Ex Human Revolution, but linear and more action.
Okay.
One thing that I really like about this game is that the character, and we've talked about this in you know, like in some cases before, the character that you control, which is, his name is Miles Kilo, by the way.
Right.
Great name, because it's like just units of measurements. He has weight to him when you control him. And I think that that's actually really cool. Like, you feel like this character is alive and you are that character, you know? The voice acting is fantastic. Michael Wincott is always great.
I was reading that Rosario Dawson's in this game.
Yeah.
She's in this.
She is. Damn. Yeah. It's a pretty high profile game, which is kind of surprising because, like, considering that EA didn't decide to announce it after E3.
Huh.
Yeah, remember, like, there was nothing about this game since E3.
Yeah, it kind of disappeared.
Well, no, it never appeared. It never appeared. Nobody even knew that they were making a Syndicate FPS.
God damn.
Until they announced it in the fall.
Oh, shit.
You know? But it's a really good game. It's probably one of the best, like, action first-person shooters I've ever played, with RPG elements, like mild RPG elements, nothing like, you know, like Mass Effect where you can do biotics and shit like that. And of course, you know, like nothing like Deus Ex where there's like hacking levels and all that stuff. But if you want an action game that tries to do something completely new with the first-person shooters, this is it.
Okay.
Like, for example, there's an overload function that your character can have, which is a way for him to hack, like, other people's chips. Because a lot of people in this world of Syndicate actually have chips implanted in them for, like, you know, for, like, improved everything, you know, improved movement, processing of information and whatnot, you know. There's a move called overload, and I feel this is kind of convenient, especially for certain players. What that does is, if, let's say, some guy is hiding behind, like, cover, right? And he's just only, like, blind firing you the whole time. And you want him to if you want to drive him out in the open, right, you just use the overload ability. And, you know, his chips will overload. And actually, his cover ability, his ability to actually maneuver and take defense is actually impaired. But what that would do is they'll basically, like, kind of overload them, and so parts of their body will stick out, you know, not all the time, but parts of their body will stick out and stuff, and you can kind of shoot that because now they're, like, you know, it's kind of like a stun function. And you can do this at certain distances, which, again, there's a lot of things that this game does that's interesting from a FPS standpoint that hasn't been done before.
Right.
And I'm talking about traditional FPS. I'm not trying to compare this to Deus Ex Human Revolution, which was my first mistake comparing, you know, when I first saw the trailers and stuff. But I like the stylistic choices that they did in both games.
And that's not like Deus Ex.
No, not at all. No, not at all. Deus Ex is more open worldy, RPG-esque. This one is a lot more action-packed.
Deus Ex. I really like Deus Ex, but yeah. I might wait for this to price drop as well, too, so. Mm-hmm.
But the co-op, though, I heard, is really good in this.
Co-op. So is it the main game just co-op, or?
No, I think they're different missions. They're co-op. Okay. I have to check that. No, that's kind of my problem. I don't have friends who actually have this game. So I can't really confirm whether the co-op is good or not. And I'm not about to, like, pair up with other people, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have other games that I've been playing, but sadly, that's kind of like all the time that we have for this episode. Shit.
Oh, god damn. That's a lot of stuff we've talked about today.
And I haven't even talked about, like, you know, like Michael Jackson Experience, Mod Nation Racers, On all the rest of the Vita games that I've played, all the games that are about to come out, Devil Survivor Overclock, Devil Survivor 2. Oh, yeah. I've been on a gaming binge the past
year.
Or even like 3D Land, Mario 3D Land.
Go ahead. I was just going to say I'm in the same situation.
Yeah, and like I'm in the last castle. And by the way, like I just, you know, I don't know if there's anything else after Bowser, but that Bowser like fight is pretty fucking good.
In the last Bowser fight?
Yeah, in World 8.
Yeah, that sequence is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is the best Bowser fight in any Mario game, I think.
Yeah, and I get when you said like he was kind of a force of nature and stuff. It's interesting because he is more like an obstacle as opposed to like a full-on boss, you know?
I think that works better for the sheer fact that Bowser battles have felt forced in mm-hmm. other Mario games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'll just grab his tail and swing him to the mine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the fights in like Mario 64 didn't really do it for me.
Right.
But in this one, it's like, it makes what Bowser should be, you know? Bowser should be an imposing force compared to Mario.
Yeah, and actually, what's funny too is that, it kind of complements the fact that you are playing a platformer. And the most important thing about platformers is timing your jumps, making sure you make all of them, and you know, and kind of avoiding all the obstacles along the way. And this is kind of like the best implementation I think of any kind of boss characters in any game, because it just, you know, for platformers for that matter, because that plays to the strengths of the medium, you know.
Yeah,
so but yeah, it is a great game, but one of these days I will finish it.
You know, there's stuff that I was playing too that I didn't talk about.
Oh gosh.
But I won't talk about them though, because there's not enough time. I will say that I've been playing a Twisted Metal a mm-hmm. little bit.
Oh.
Been playing Soul Calibur 5. I've been playing also, these are kind of quicker games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been playing Death Smiles, which I'm absolutely loving mm-hmm. on the iPhone.
Yeah.
So.
Amalur?
Nope. Haven't touched it yet.
It is going to be a good game if you just pop it in and stuff.
Yeah, but. But yeah, the problem is I might get sucked into that game, and I don't want to get sucked into it right now.
Jesus. I'm pretty sure you're not going to be able to get around to it even like later in the year and stuff.
We'll see what happens.
Yes, we will. So, all right. So, I guess that about does it for this episode of the podcast, huh?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So, plug your shit.
Oh, yes. You can find my YouTube channel at Magus, not Magus. That would have been nice if there's a MagusX1.com. No, YouTube.com/user/MagusX1.
Mm-hmm.
And there you will find my rants and my rambles about gaming, anime, movies, film, bad driving, and anything else that I feel like talking about. I'm a lot more open on that channel.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of topics.
Yes. Variety.
Variety, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, all right, and of course, you can follow me, Anthony, and of course this podcast on Twitter at, for me, twitter.com/EternityInBlack. For Anthony, you can follow him on twitter.com/MagusX1. And of course, if you know, you want to get updates on what's going on with the podcast and stuff, if we need like more suggestions and stuff, like, you know, you can follow us on twitter.com/GamerHorizon. But, you know, if you subscribe to like me and, you know, me and or Anthony and stuff, you'll get a lot of the updates and stuff. And if
you also find, you know, get detailed explanations of Alex's gaming life, such as step-by-step unboxing, setting up of the Vita.
Yeah, I actually did that.
Yes, yes. As I said, as detailed as an erotic novel. and then for me, you will find stupid shit saying, "Oh, my wife made pancakes. That is awesome."
Yes, very entertaining.
They're rather pointless and serve no purpose in life. So,
jeez. Oh,
that's how my posts are. They're like, "Oh, I found a quarter on the sidewalk."
Oh, jeez.
That's what I tweet about.
Yeah. And of course, like, you know, you'll find some, you know, some choice kind of content. Like, you know, I don't know if you saw like my tweet last night about Natsu's junk. I'm like,
I thought I'd post fucking weird shit.
Yeah, I'm like, Natsu, you have quite the junk down there. What's going on? You got a package. You have a package bigger than most men. What gives?
Damn.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to check that out, follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/attorneyinblack. If you want to listen to, you know, Anthony's mundane shit, you go to, like, twitter.com/magusx1. Of course, Gamer Horizons, Twitter at twitter.com/gamerhorizon. Now, if you want to email us and comment about any of the things that we mentioned in the podcast, you know, past, present, or future, you know, because obviously, like, this is going to be released in the future, even though it's in the past. You can email us at mailbox@gamerhorizon.com because we love fan mail.
Yes, we do.
Yes. So, and if you want to subscribe to our podcast and stuff, and if you want to find all this information, you can always go to our website at gamerhorizon.com where you can find a link to our Twitter, our main Twitter account, and our link to our iTunes podcast page. I don't know why I forgot about that. And you know, of course, like our RSS feed if you want to use like Google Reader and stuff to subscribe to our podcast. So any final words, dude, before you go?
And on next week's episode, Alex finds himself in a rather dubious situation, deciding between Mass Effect 3 or Binary Domain, while a swarm of other games threaten to kill him for not playing them. While Anthony finds out that Sarah and Lightning are pretty pissed off with him because he hasn't been playing with them for a while. In the game.
I'm really confused right now. But anyways.
I'm trying to do next episode. Since we've been talking a lot about animes.
Mm-hmm.
Doing in the next episode. You know how animes do that?
Yeah. Yes. I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, your game's going to kill you.
It's probably going to be a choice between Mass Effect 3 and Street Fighter Cross Tekken. But knowing me and not how non-competitive I am is going to be Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, it'll probably be.
That
both. Well, I don't know. Mass Effect 3 most likely.
Yeah, definitely. So
not its multiplayer.
Yeah. Oh gosh, multiplayer. Don't get me started on that. Anyways, so until next week, we'll see you later.